turned off or switched to silent, and the use of mobile devices for recording is not permitted. Members of the public should not speak during the meeting and may be temporarily excluded for discussion of in-committee items. Members of the public and press must refrain from using the instant message facility during the meeting, and anyone found to be doing so will be given a warning. Failing to adhere to the guidelines for a second time will result in being removed from the meeting. I would remind members of their obligations under the Councillor's Code of Conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interests which they have in any item of business before the committee today. If you have such an interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating the item of business it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the meeting by hanging up from the call for the duration of the discussion on that item and should not take part in the vote. You will then be invited back to join the meeting once the discussion on that item has ended. The proceedings of the meeting will be audio and video recorded, except for councillors considering any exempt matters. The recording equipment is linked to the microphone system on the computer, so please ensure your microphone is switched on before speaking. Members are reminded that they're personally responsible for any comments they make at the meeting. Please ensure if you wish to speak on an item, use the instant message facility to indicate your wish to speak. I'll bring members in as listed. Members should ensure their cameras are switched on when speaking, and cameras should also be switched on whenever a vote is being taken. And I know we're quite well versed in this. Just to remind members about the instant message and the following letters: Q if you wish to ask a question, P if you wish to propose, and S if you want to second. And please refrain from making any other comments using the instant message. And in the event that two councillors propose at the same time, the person who proposed first will be taken as proposer, and the person who proposed second will be recorded as the seconder. So can I maybe check with Democratic Services if we have any other apologies received?
No, none received.
Okay, have we any other apologies from the floor? Okay, so if we can move maybe to declarations of interest.
None, Chair.
Okay. There's a question there from Councillor Burgess. Yeah.
Yes, Chair. Can I just ask for a point of information there and maybe a bit of advice? I'm Chair of Commons. Should I declare an interest? Or I'm looking for a bit of legal advice on that.
I'll just check with Marie. I think not. Robert Burgess, a second.
Chair, if we could maybe just bring Nora Largie in, who's on the line, and she maybe set out some of the key matters for tonight. Is that okay, Nora? You on the line there, okay?
That's great. I'm sure to move that. Nora, you're very welcome to join us. Nora's from Belfast Legal Services. I know anybody from the Planning Committee would know Nora very well. You're very welcome to our special council meeting this evening. Nora, if you'd be happy to outline the current situation and how we're going to proceed tonight.
Yes, thank you, Chair. For the committee, the people who sit on Planning Committee, some of this might be a bit familiar, but I just wanted to set out basically the premise for the meeting this evening. I know that the Council had previously given a consultation response in respect of this application, but because the application has been amended, the planning decision maker, which is DFI, has to reconsult in respect of that amended application. The effect of that is that you have to reconsider your consultation response. If you fail to put a further consultation response in, the planning decision-making body would presume that you no longer have an objection in respect of the application. And I know that the Council certainly would want its views to be known in respect of the application, and that was why we had recommended that this special meeting be called. But the difference with this is that you aren't actually the planning authority in respect of this application. Your role is to decide on a consultation response from the Council as a corporate body. So you're not bound in the same way that you would be if you are sitting on Planning Committee. Planning Committee are entitled to take part. There is no reason why a Planning Committee would have to declare an interest or leave the meeting. So everyone is able to vote. The Planning Committee can vote. You don't have to have been involved in the previous decision. Obviously, there's been an election since the last consultation response. You don't have to have been on a site visit or anything of that nature. So those bars that would normally apply in Planning Committee don't apply in respect of this, because you are not the decision maker. What you are doing is providing a consultation response.
Oh, well.
Sorry, I think there's somebody else speaking, maybe. So I think that probably answers Councillor Burgess's question. The only thing I would say, obviously, is whilst the normal Planning Committee rules don't apply, you do have the obligations in respect of the Councillor's Code of Conduct. in terms of any conflicts of interest which you may have. The Chair has already advised members that you must declare those. There has been objections received from members of the public querying whether or not there would be any conflicts of interest for members of the Planning Committee taking part, and I can confirm that there is no such conflict. And there's also been an objection raised in relation to the Council's obligations under legislation which requires special protection of fauna and things like that under the Nature and Conservation, just double check the title of it, the Nature, Conservation and Amenity Lands Order 1985. Those provisions don't actually apply in respect of your meeting tonight, because you're not making a decision, you're not exercising a statutory function. You are meeting to decide whether or not the Council wishes to make a corporate response in respect of this planning application. So you don't have to make a response. My advice to you is that you probably should, otherwise it would be taken that you have no objection or there are no issues that you wish to raise, or indeed that you may wish to support the application once you've heard from the speakers. So I think that's really a summary of the main issues. Obviously, I'm happy to take any other questions to try and give members some reassurance in terms of the process. But what we have recommended to you is that you would hear from the objectors to the application and hear from the applicant. What we probably would also suggest is you may want to allow them an opportunity to rebut any factual inaccuracies. So it's just to make sure that if, you know, another speaker has raised a point that is factually incorrect, that somebody has an opportunity to deal with that. We'll certainly help you through that process, and the Chair has been on Planning Committee, so we'll, you know, be familiar with that. And that's probably just good practice, because then you'll make sure that you've heard from everybody and that there can be no suggestion that there was some glaring factual inaccuracy that you weren't aware of or that you were potentially misled in respect of.
Thanks for that, Nora.
That's great. Nora, thank you very much. I see the two questions there from Councillor Tinley and then from Councillor Riley. Is this relating to just the process, Councillor Tinley?
Yeah, I just want to ask Nora something. Chair, I just want to ask Nora something, if that's okay.
Yep, go on ahead, Jarlath.
Nora, listen, because this is a departmental decision that has to be made, and you know, they are looking basically a corporate response from us, which is a yes or no. If we deviate from that straightforward yes or no, how, in your opinion, would that be regarded by the department in relation to their decision making?
Okay. Well, we are a statutory consultee in respect of this application, so we would have an elevated, not that there is a hierarchy of responses, but it's recognised in legislation that the local council, in respect of which the regionally significant application is to be placed, would have a significant view, and that is a very significant view which should be taken into account. So you can, I mean, the view of the council is the view of the council, whether that's agreeing, not taking a position, disagreeing, you know, making some other suggestion in respect of the application. That's the council's view, and the department would have to have regard to it. And as I say, because you are a statutory consultee, you know, that would have some serious weight.
Thank you, Nora. Councillor Riley?
Thanks, Madam Chair. Nora, just on what Councillor Burgess mentioned there about participating in discussion if you're on the Planning Committee, it was pointed out to me a while back that if a councillor makes a very determined opinion that he is opposed to wind turbines in general, that if you're on the Planning Committee, a wind turbine comes before you, you would be excluded from the discussion because you wouldn't give an objective decision. So it is very important how people word their contributions or pitch their contributions whenever you're discussing this type of thing and thinking about the future. But I just wanted to ask you, am I correct in that assertion? Thanks so much.
Yeah, I'm not actually sure. Obviously, I'll give the lawyer answer of each situation depends, and it depends on precisely the comments that are made in respect of an application. But generally, there is nothing wrong with having a view that you're, you know, that you you're concerned about wind turbines. It's when you get into a position where you would say, for example, I don't agree with them and I would vote down every application that ever came before me. That would be predetermination potentially in respect of an application. But where you generally have a concern about a particular type of development, there's nothing wrong with that. You can have a concern as long as you keep that in a very general, in a general sense and remain open. But the thing again is that this is not a planning committee. You are not the decision maker. DFI is the decision maker. So you're not bound in the same way that you would if you were planning committee making a determination. This is the council making a corporate response.
Thank you, Nora. That's been very, very useful. So I suppose just in terms of the running of the meetings outline to members, the way things are going to go, obviously we've had our introductions from Nora. Thank you for that. The first item will be a report from our council's planning department. Members will have the opportunity then to ask questions in respect of that report. We will then move on and have a presentation from the applicant, ABO Wind. Again, members will have the opportunity to ask some questions after that. We will then move to the presentation from the objectors, and again, some questions after that. And I suppose at that point, then the applicant or the objector can rebut any of the comments that have already been made if necessary. We'll then ask Anthony to clarify any points that have been made. And then if I can ask members up until that point to simply just ask questions, not to make any proposals until we get to item 8, that will allow then everybody to have their say and be involved in the whole process. So hopefully everybody can adhere to those rules. That would be much appreciated. So if we're happy enough to get kick-started, I can hand it over to Anthony McKay, our Principal Planning Officer, for the report from the Council.
Thank you for that, Chair. The report before you sets out the planning department's considered position in terms of the planning merits of the proposal. This is the third time the application has come before the council. As on previous occasions, as Nora has advised, we're not the decision taker. We are a consultee in the process. Ultimately, the decision will be taken by the Department for Infrastructure. The application tonight is for a reduced number of turbines, 8 in total. The turbines would be bigger than those previously proposed, this time up to 142.5 metres in height. You'll see from the report, and I don't propose to rehearse the report in any detail, but you'll see our key concerns are with the scale, with the size and the siting of these turbines. The site sits within the Mourne's Area of Outstanding Natural Beauty. It's also located within the Mourne's Special Countryside Area. So this is a sensitive upland landscape of exceptionally high scenic quality. We do recognise and acknowledge the benefits that would flow from a proposal of this nature, and they will be set out to you, I'm sure, in the presentations to come. But on balance, the proposal is considered to be unacceptable in planning terms for the reasons set out in that report. You should have in your papers a copy of the previous recommendation that was conveyed to the department that took form of a letter of 26th of February 2018. That essentially set out the recommendation which we are presenting tonight, because in effect nothing much has changed from a planning perspective, and that is that we indicate to DFI the council's opposition to the planning application. So I'm happy to leave it there and to take any questions that you might have now or following various presentations that you're about to hear.
That's great, Anthony. Thank you very much. So do we have any questions from members for Anthony in respect of the report? Okay, a question from Councillor Byrne.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Anthony, just before we go on to the two presentations, and I say you've outlined there that the detail will be set out in both presentations. I was one of the councillors that sat on the first decision in 2017 and went on the site visit meetings to the twin turbine sites with yourself, and then sat on the presentation from planning, which came to that special council meeting, where we got an unbiased presentation from planning, which gave us views and a lot of detail in the report. I understand that Nora says that this is a consultation response and no, we're not making the decisions. You know, so at the start she said we don't need to have a site visit. We're not the decision makers, it is DFI. I completely understand that. We're giving a steer to DFI on this application. But I and my group in the SDLP have come at it as if we are making the decision. And I think we need to be responsible and come at it as if it is a decision that we are making. Because we don't have an overarching strategy from the government. We had Stormont down for 3 years and we don't have a strategy on where the amount of renewable energy that we need and the sites that are permissible. And I think we should have that, and I think it's a shocking failure from government. But it does fall on local government to come up and give a steer, a clear steer to the minister in this. And we went out, and I want to thank public, the public for contacting us and for the lobby groups that engaged with us. And we have engaged extensively with both sides of the debate and individuals over the last 3 weeks to garner as much information as we can. So I have to say that I disagree that the detail will be set out in both these presentations. Both sides, whatever side you're coming at, are coming at from their biased side. And it is the planning department that outlines an unbiased report in front of us. And I have to say, the report that was in front of us in 2017 was something that was very informative for me. The site visits were very informative. Over 50% of the councillors here tonight don't have that luxury of having that, those past site visits. And we effectively have a paper in front of us, bar the background, is a copy and paste job from 2017. And I generally think that is unacceptable. You know, we all trip over ourselves to get the date for carbon neutrality down, whether it's stated at 2050, some parties say it at 2035. And we have in this council and right across the north declared a climate emergency. So these decisions, even though they're only a steer, must be made as if we are making a decision ourselves. We must interrogate the information in front of us. And I have to say, the report in front of us is very, very disappointing. And went through the report and I put it side by side, the 2017, and you may say that some things don't change. But again, people didn't have the full information in 2017 because they didn't get site visits and they didn't get your extensive presentation. And the only thing that's changed them is the number 10 to 8. That's the only thing changed from the outside the background timeline. And I find that very, very poor. I have since, and I'll finish up on this, I have since come from my position in 2017 and engaged with both sides and learned a lot more from that engagement. And I would expect, if I went into the planning committee, decisions that we make on very, very small applications, to us to give this as much respect as we give those applications. And I fully take on board that we're not making the decision. But this is a major, major issue that we need to get right, and we need to get the steer right. And how on earth we could actually come to a decision to inform the minister of which direction to go on the information that's in front of us, I would scratch my head. And you would fall down on who comes out with the best argument in both lobby groups. And I don't think that's very fair. So I think an extensive report should have been in front of us, like we had in 2017, and we shouldn't just be effectively passing the buck because it's not our decision and having a copy and paste job from 2017. So I'm very, very disappointed in it.
Okay, Pete, thanks very much. I'll bring in Councillor Riley then, before we go back to Anthony. Henry, do you want to go on ahead there?
Yes, Madam Chair. I wanted clarification from Mr. Mackay. Anthony, are you, in your professional opinion, as a professional planning officer of long service, advising me as a councillor that the amended plans with the reduction in turbines is still unacceptable in planning terms?
Are you happy to come back in there, Anthony?
Yep, yes, Chair. That is correct. We have a reduction in the number of turbines down to 8, and we've increased the height to 142 metres. Now, if you explore all the consultation responses that have come into the department on this, this application ticks most of the technical boxes in terms of the suitability of the proposal. What doesn't change are the items that are highlighted in the report, which is the scale and the siting of these turbines, these larger turbines, in one of the most sensitive landscape designations in Northern Ireland. That doesn't change, and nothing in respect of our position on this, nothing has changed from 2017-2018. The proposal is fundamentally unacceptable principally because of the location that has been chosen and the size of the turbines that are proposed and the impact that, that they will have.
Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Anthony.
If I may, Chair, in responding to Councillor Byrne, that is essentially our position. There has been a reduction in the number of turbines, but fundamentally, nothing has changed from a planning perspective. And you know, we could bring a very, very detailed report rehearsing all of the arguments that have been set out in relation to this. But it is the sensitivity of this landscape and the unacceptable impact that these would have bring us to the conclusion that we have. And it's, you know, it may seem a very small report, but the key issues are there.
Chair, can I have a brief comment on that? Because that's not the point I'm making, if you don't mind.
Yep, sure.
Anthony, the point I'm making is I have the luxury, and other councillors have the luxury, of being on either the site visits and having the extensive presentation from the planner, in which we find is giving us a steer as local government rather than both lobby groups when they come into this meeting. And the 2017 presentation, which came with the paper and the visuals and the site visits, we got a lot more information that a lot of people here aren't given the respect to be given that information by the planning. And I find that really, really disappointing, that it's effectively, it's going to be set out to you in both presentations. I really don't find that acceptable in a decision of this magnitude, even though it is a decision to steer. And I think it should have got the same respect that the decision got in 2017. It was treated with a lot more respect from the planning department.
Thank you. Pete, I'm going to bring in a couple more councillors there. Anthony, we've got Councillor McAteer, okay. You're in next there.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Chair. It's a question, I suppose, maybe both for Anthony and maybe for Nora. Can I quote from the key issues at number 2.1, where the report says the potential benefits are acknowledged, not least the investment in the local and NA-wide economies, the funding of local community groups and organisations, the contribution to achieving renewable energy, generating targets on the reduction in greenhouse gas emissions. Could I just ask Nora that given that most developed governments in the world have agreed that there's a climate emergency, and the Council itself have formed a committee to deal with climate change, is it actually where the report says we recognise the benefits accruing from this, then go on to say that that there should not be given determining weight. So what would the legal opinion of that statement carry? On one hand, the report says there are benefits, we're in a climate emergency, then go on to say that these benefits shouldn't be given determining weight. So is that an approach that it being keeping with council policy and world governmental policy as well?
Okay. The answer to that is really what you are now into is the realm of plan, what we would call on planning committee and planning judgment. So really, Councillor McAteer, this is that's a judgment call that your professional planning officers have offered to the council, and it would be a matter for the council to consider in weighing up all of those material considerations, whether or not you agreed with the advice from your planning officers in respect of whether or not that should be given determining weight. So it's really a matter of judgment.
Yes, we can make the judgment call on it whether it should be given determined weight or not.
Yes, because and ultimately bear in mind that all you will be doing will be giving a consultation response. You won't be, you know, the determining body, but certainly when you are deciding as a corporate body whether or not you wish to object or support the proposal, that's something that you would have to assess.
Yeah, I think you alluded earlier on at the beginning of the meeting the amount of weight attached and the importance of a local council's consultation to the department, and the department responsible for planning for major applications like this. So I would very much disagree with the fact that they should not be given the term weight. It's a contradiction in the report in itself. But as you say, that's a matter for, is it only a matter then for, it's a criticism of the report, but it's really only a matter for councillors to deal with.
Okay.
But I just think, just to Anthony, I think it highlights the fact that Councillor Byrne made, that the report to councillors wasn't treated with the amount of credit and seriousness actually that I think that it should have been. And you did say 2 minutes ago that you could have produced a more in-depth report. I only wish you did. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, Anthony, do you want to come back in there?
If I could, to the first point Councillor McAteer makes, and that was what we said in the report was that the benefits that he alluded to should not be given determining weight and set against the unacceptable adverse impacts arising from the proposal to develop the wind farm. You didn't mention the second half of that sentence, and that sets it in a somewhat different context, because we all recognise the climate emergency, but as Nora has said, the application is before us for consideration, and we weigh up the considerations, and I think we have set out the consideration there. And in terms of criticism of the report, we have a certain amount of time on our hands available to produce reports, and a similar report was acceptable a couple of years ago. And like I say, very little has changed in relation to the proposal that is in front of us.
I do have sympathy with the planning department's pressure at the moment, and that's actually what I fear that has happened. There has been insufficient time and resources to compile a report to the level that we councillors, and in fact half the councillors, this is the first time they've ever heard tell of Grogan do. I do think that it would have warranted more of an input, more of a serious consideration, as Anthony said, given the fact that it's a position of, you know, matching it against the unacceptable adverse impacts arising from the proposal. And I do think that's why a more in-depth report should have been produced tonight.
Thank you, Declan. Your comments there have been noted. Thank you. If we may move on, then we've still got questions from Councillor Enright, McKee and Gibbons, and we'll try to take them all in one go and then go back to Anthony or Nora as we see fit. Councillor Enright, do you want to go next there?
Thanks, Chairperson. My concern is that the report before us tonight is indistinguishable from the report that we had a couple of years ago. Like Pete, I was involved in site visits, but I can't see where in this report the changing council policy has been reflected. When it was originally discussed, the original application as it was then, we hadn't declared a climate change emergency, nor, to the best of my knowledge, had any other council in Northern Ireland. The situation has substantially changed. Stormont, all the assemblies in the United Kingdom, and have all declared climate change emergencies, and this was intended to affect changes in policy. I can't see where those changes in policy are in any way reflected in Anthony's document, despite the substantial changes to the proposals that are coming before us. Second of all, we are now the only large council with substantial wind resources on the island of Ireland with zero revenue by way of rates from wind farms. And this needs to be taken into account too. We need to fund our council. Now, I note councils like Donegal, like Clare, like Kerry, right around the country, have natural resources, heritage resources, They have to protect the environment, they have to protect wildlife. And yet each one of these councils who are in areas that depend on tourism have managed to get a large number of wind farms passed. And they're taking their responsibilities with regard to zero carbon and climate change emergency seriously. I also note that there has been no adverse reports in any county in Ireland where wind farms are present of adverse environmental or adverse tourism reaction to said wind farms. So I'm just concerned now that we're bringing up the rear. The economic facts are not reflected in Anthony's report vis-a-vis other councils in Ireland. And most important of all, the report before us tonight, I think, as Pete referred to, doesn't appear to have changed in any substantial way, despite the fact that both at governmental and at council level, we are now operating on the basis that there is a climate change emergency. And I'm just concerned that that is not anywhere really substantially in your report.
Thank you, Cadogan. I'll bring in Councillor McKee and then Councillor Gibbons, and we'll try and then get on to the presentations, if that's okay. Councillor McKee, you're in next, sir.
Yes, thanks, Chair. Yeah, just having been sitting on the planning for a while, obviously I was interested in some of the policies in relation to this, and I've read with interest the various policies connected to this application, despite the third manoeuvring of the turbines, which were 12, 10, and reduced to 8. Now, they are now 17 metres taller, which is actually 55 feet taller, at total of 142 metres, which is 465 feet tall. This is almost like 8 London Eyes on a hilltop, yet the planning policies remain the same. My question is, does this not alter the distance from the turbine to the residential areas? Thank you.
Thank you, Harold. I think that Nora is looking in there. We'll bring Nora in, then we'll go to Councillor Gibbons after that. Nora?
Yes, Chair, it was just, obviously there are a lot of concerns and issues that members are raising at this stage, but what I would remind you is that when you are making your consultation response, whilst you're not bound in the same way that you would be as a planning authority, you are making a consultation response to another planning authority, and that planning authority is obliged to make decisions in accordance with the local development plan for the area and in accordance with planning policies, unless material considerations indicate otherwise. So I in no way am dismissing the concerns and the issues that have been raised in relation to climate change, etc. But I would remind you that the strongest grounds that you would have for making any representation in respect of this planning application needs to be on the basis of planning policy, unless there are material considerations otherwise. So there's a statutory requirement on a planning authority to make decisions in accordance with planning policy. So I understand all of the concerns that have been raised, but I would just remind the committee of that. And I'm conscious that you do have other presentations that you may wish to hear from before you get into more of a debate in relation to these issues. But again, that's a matter for the chair and obviously for the councillors.
Thank you, Nora. We have a question there from Councillor Gibbons.
Hello, Chair. Thank you. It's just I know you're going to be pushed for time, Chair. So just quickly to say that I wasn't there for 2017. I'm only newly elected, but I don't feel aggrieved for not being there. I think the report is very detailed. And just to say that I'm happy with the report as in the detail that it's provided me with. And I don't feel aggrieved for not being there in 2017.
Okay, thank you. Mark, Anthony, was there anything else you want to come back in there in terms of his previous speakers? Are we content to move to the presentation from Abel Wind?
Just very briefly, Chair. I'm conscious as anybody about the idea of a climate emergency, but I have to reiterate the policies against which planning applications are assessed have not changed. And therefore, I cannot introduce policies that don't exist. And councillors should be mindful of that the policy context, at the risk of repeating myself, has not changed. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Anthony. John, you have a question there. Is this for Anthony, or is that for the next element?
Yes, Chair. It's for Anthony, Chair. It's actually, Chair, in relation to PPS 16 in the report in relation to TSM 8. I suppose my question is, obviously Anthony's given us his opinion in his professional capacity, but what reports or surveys has he undertaken as to the potential impact that such a development would have on the tourism asset? Because I don't see any reports subsequent to that actual opinion. I don't see any of those reports present. And I suppose it goes back to maybe what Councillor Byrne had said and Councillor McAteer, and insofar as you know, we are being given advice of which we are trying to make a decision. If there is maybe an issue around you know, the impact of the tourism, and obviously we all would understand that the Mourns is one of our greatest tourism assets in the district, it would be important then to have subsequent reports that would highlight to us what the potential impacts would be. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, John. Anthony, do you want to come back in there before I go to Aberwind?
I can confirm that the Council have not undertaken independent studies to produce an outcome one way or the other. We are afforded the luxury of being allowed to assess the proposal against the policy and to come to a reasonable judgment, and we'll be judged on whether that is reasonable or not. The point is, this is a landscape with the highest possible designation attached to it in Northern Ireland. There are only four of these. This is one of them. You're proposing to put a very large wind farm within the most highly designated landscape. It has the potential to impact across the entire AONB. It has the potential to impact on the tourism asset that is the Mourne's area of outstanding natural beauty. I think the planning department is entitled to make that judgment, and the councillors are at liberty to disagree with that.
Okay, Anthony, thank you very much for receiving those questions. So we're going to move on to Aberwind. I suppose, folks, just to point out, obviously, as chair of the meeting, if it comes up on your screen to admit people from the lobby or they're waiting in the lobby, if Democratic Services will do that, so if nobody else can do that, it's just important that we control the amount of people that are in the meeting. So it's only Democratic Services, so please refrain from doing that, please. Okay, if we can move on now to item number four, which is the presentation from Aberwind. We have Thomas Bell and Tamsin Fraser here this evening. As you'll both know, you've got 10 minutes to present to Council, so the floor is yours.
Chair Nelly, if I could ask a question, clarification please, of the solicitor, the Council solicitor, before we start, and it relates to the commentary in respect to the legislative point. There was some inference there that the key issues here were the planning policy statement, the 18, and in my view, and the dumbing down of the legislative requirements. The legislative requirements in the regional policy are set out in the first three pages of PPS 18, and it's fairly fundamental given the Climate Change Act that's coming in to the UK, the Climate Bill that's coming in to Stormont, and indeed the SEF, which is going to likely set a target of 70% by 2030. Before I start, I would just ask if there's some clarification around that point, please.
Thank you, Thomas. Nora, are you happy to answer that?
Well, Chair, really, the protocol is that I would be here to answer questions from councillors, and that you would receive a presentation, and then it's up to members if they feel that they want to get advice in relation to the issues that have raised. If I think it's probably really a question for Anthony rather than me in terms of the law. It does seem to me that these are all things that you weigh up in determining how you want to respond to the application as a statutory consultee. And again, it's a matter of judgment.
Okay, Nora, thank you for that. So, Thomas, we'll hand back to you for your 10 minutes. You want to start now?
Okay, thank you. Dear Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity to present the amended 8 turbine scheme. I'm joined tonight by Thomas and Fraser of Aberwind, and we're going to tag team to echo some of the councillors' disappointment. I too would just like to reiterate that point, that this is a conceded scheme. It's 8 turbines. Material planning considerations have moved on. Renewable energy targets have changed. And it seems remiss that the planning team wouldn't want to set that out to ensure that their members are fully informed on what is a very important decision tonight. There's five items, members, that I'd like to run through before finishing off with a summary. Just a recap from what happened in 2017, what's changed since, the local contribution, which Tamazin will deal with, the appropriate location, because as the planning officer set out, that there appears to be better sites for wind farms in Uri Mourne and Darna, and I'd like to clarify that, and the overall benefits before finishing off with a summary. So members, to recap in 2017, the three themes that were put to you were that there was a 40% target was due to be met at that time. I think the figure was quoted as 30%. We're now sitting at about 48%, so we have exceeded that, but it was only ever, it was a target, it was never a cap. And when the point was made to try and undermine the proposal in terms of its contribution, it's entirely irrelevant now, given where we're going to the period to 2030. There was also an assertion made that there may be other sites in the Mourne's AOMB, and we have a number of extracts we'd like to run through and show you just how limited it is. And last but not least, that the proposal is not reasonably significant or reasonably important, as the planning policy sets out in terms of being an exception to the SEA. The fact, members, that the application isn't in your council and it's sitting in the DFI goes without saying that it is reasonably significant. So what's changed, members? Obviously, there's been a net decrease of 4, so we're down now to 8 turbines, and there has been a modest increase to 17.5 metres up from the 120. The one thing I would say, members, is that the turbine that had been proposed, Nortex 100, is no longer simply available, and now we're going for a Vesta 117. And the good news is that despite the fact that there's a concession, that modest increase allows that the benefits, particularly those that were promised to the community back in 2015, remain consistent. So members, this gives you a visualisation of what's been conceded. You can see that the turbines that had been there, turbine 12, 11, 10, and indeed turbine 8, are now gone. And what that translates into, members, is you remember these shots back in 2015 from Trainers Bridge. If we can draw your attention to these turbines in here, you can see that the contrast from the 2020 shot then. Then the Clondalk GAA Club is a very public viewpoint. It's a static viewpoint, and therefore it's very important from a planning perspective. And you can see the sort of linear formation from the 12 turbine scheme, and that's now been conceded down, and you can see a much more consolidated pattern. Leitrim Road, looking west, members, it's difficult to see there with a backdrop, but you can just about see the turbines back in 2015, the height of those, and then in 2020, you can see, apologies to quality since I went to share screen, seems to have dumbed that down even further. More and way looking toward the Rocky Mountain again, members, you can see the turbines here and here, and you can see them now being omitted. That one there, members, you can see the increase.
Sorry, Thomas, can I interrupt up for a second? There's some members that I can't see the visual. Can I maybe ask Sarah from Democratic Services, could you link in? I think Declan and Jarlath are saying they can't see the visual. Is there issues with anybody else, or is it just those two members? No, I can see it here.
I can see it here.
Sure, there had been an issue of mine, but it's come back online. It was just the previous couple of slides that kind of had, it's actually frozen, Chair.
Okay. Sarah, could you have a link in with Declan and Charlotte there?
Just on the phone with Declan, actually.
Okay. Thanks a million. Apologies to Thomas. Sorry, work away there.
Sorry, Charlotte. So I went back there. Can everybody see the Trainers Bridge shot?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so I'll run through those then. I think I was here. So, again, we're looking over Rocky Mountain here, looking west. You can see on the 2020 shot, the turbines are omitted then. I'll pass you over to Tamazin now to talk about what's changed in terms of the contributions.
Thanks. Members, you've had an overview of the amended scheme, and I think it's important to highlight the updated energy context in which this amendment fits, which the Council Planning Department failed to explore. As Thomas noted, 40% renewables by 2020 has been exceeded, but this was a target and not a cap. Despite Nora's comments, and very importantly, since then, net zero by 2050 is now enshrined in legislation as of 2019, and it followed in January 2020 that the new decade new approach document, having cross-party support, set out the priorities of the restored executive. A strategic objective of that document is to address climate change through reducing carbon emissions, an economic strategy to support clean growth, and a new energy strategy to achieve a zero carbon society. The energy strategy is currently under preparation, and at the end of last month, Minister Dawes stated that the new target will not be less than 70% in line with other parts of the UK and Ireland. Now, it's taken more than 20 years to get to 48% renewables, with a minimum of a further 22% required by 2030. And of the achievement to date, onshore wind accounted for 85%. And it's widely recognised that it will continue to be the largest contributor to any new target. Even as recently as last week, a climate bill was tabled to the Assembly, which raises the bar for Northern Ireland even higher, seeking to achieve net zero by 2045 instead of 2050. So considering that, considering the national and regional objectives in the local context, this is a graphic from the recent pipeline report published by DfE, which shows very limited installed capacity in County Down, somewhere in the order of 9 megawatts, shown in turquoise there. Moreover, on the next slide, as you can see from this graphic from the same report, there's limited further capacity consented in Newry and Mourne, shown in orange. So with little in the pipeline and very limited opportunities for development of generation moving forward, which Thomas will come on to next, this project represents a real opportunity for the council to make a significant contribution towards future targets.
Thanks, Thomas. And so, members, you recall this image back in 2017, and what it simply shows is the topography of the DEAs of Newry, Mourne and Down overlaid onto that, showing the dark red as being the peaks. So you can see Slieve Croob, the Mournes and Slieve Gullion, and the mossy green colours on Downpatrick, clearly the flatter lands where it wouldn't be conducive to wind farms. And it simply places the site in context, showing that the Mournes is to the east of that location. Then what we've done is we've overlaid another serious planning constraint to wind farms, and that's to do with 500 metres separation distances. And once you do that, members, with the data, you can very quickly see that it becomes a wash of pink. And other than the three peaks, i.e. the areas that are topographically challenging and which normally would be conducive to wind farms, are the only parts that are left blank. You can see members maybe just there. That actually leaves 11.91%. Then, members, if we take away the uplands of those peaks, the areas that you wouldn't put a wind farm because of the pristine environment, and more importantly, because logistically, it would be extremely difficult to put a wind farm in those localities. When you remove that percent, you then fall to 1.98%. There clearly are, members, still some slivers around here. There's some just to the east of Slieve Gullion. I think that's Barnish Way, and up here beside Slieve Croob to the west. But again, members, even those locations would have their own constraints in terms of natural heritage and archaeology. The point being is there's not a whole lot of sites. Members, this slide simply shows the span of the SEA running from Newcastle west, showing a 20-metre span, and simply just to show that another 800 metres west and we would have actually been outside the SEA. So members, if we unpack that and we overlay all the constraints, what it clearly shows is that this assertion that there are a plenty full of sites, or that there may be a different site in Mourne's, in Newry, Mourne and Down, is simply an unsustainable argument. Pass over to Thomas and just run through benefits.
Thomas, just you've less than 2 minutes left, okay?
That's super, thank you.
Thank you.
So in amending the scheme, it was very important to us as a developer to ensure that the project delivered significant environmental, social and economic benefits, and that we were able to stand over the commitments previously made at the outset of the project. So as you can see from this slide, environmentally, the project will generate enough electricity to power approximately 43% of all households in Newry and Mourne, at the same time reducing carbon emissions equivalent to taking 45,000 cars off the road. It also represents an investment by ABO of around £25 million, and the project will generate £9.8 million of business rates over the 20 years. Finally, the £3.25 million community fund, as originally proposed, remains in place, with several legal agreements already in place to fund a number of groups in the Hilltown area. One such example is for a new facility at Clonduff GAC. ABO has sponsored the club's recent planning application, the green roofs of which you can just see in the mock-up on screen. And we understand that the application is progressing well and likely to receive a positive decision shortly. So in summary, members, we've set out this evening the amendments to the scheme and the significant benefits to be derived from it. Despite the report prepared by the Council's Planning Department, as Thomas has demonstrated, the project is reasonably significant and permissible in both SEA and AONB. There's been much focus in recent days on the level of objection, but I think it's important to remember there's also a significant amount of local support for this. We understand, following some press at the weekend, that there's an appetite for a public inquiry to be called regarding the project. We've been working on this project for almost 10 years, five of which has been in the planning system. As such, I'm content that our efforts have resulted in a robust project, and as such, would be happy to support a motion to go to public inquiry. My only request would be that given how long it's been in the system and the short period of 2030, that the process would be expedited.
Okay. Okay, Tamsin, thank you very much, and thank you, Thomas, for that presentation. It's very useful. If we go then to members, can I ask members just to have questions for Abu Wind as opposed to actually, you know, statements or comments, if that would be possible? So we've got two speakers in so far. We've got a question from Councillor O'Hare. Chair.
Hello. Thanks, Chair. Yeah, this is for Abu here. There's a wee thing here I didn't think you mentioned in that slide at all now. It's clear from the realms of documentation attached to the planning application that these 142-metre high turbines will be visible from County Louth, a fact that you confidently didn't tell Sinn Féin reps when we met to discuss this application, by the way. However, can you confirm if you discussed with council planning officials the need for a transboundary notification, given that the proposed wind farm would impact upon the landscape character of the Tameway in County Louth? Can council planning officials clarify if this is indeed the case? Now, the Tameway is a 40-kilometre trail. It starts from Cardingford. It has spectacular views of Cardingford Lap, Cooley Mountains, Slieve Gullion, Camlagh Mountains, and also the Mourns. So that's one question. Another one as well. I would just like to know about the grid connection. How is this to be achieved without massive investment and destruction to the local environment? So there's a lot of questions have to be answered here now from Abo. You know, it's there's the money's involved, which is, as I say, money's the root of all evil. So I would just like a few questions or answers, I'm going to say, from yourselves about that.
Okay, thank you, Joe. I think you've asked two questions. What I'm going to do is I'll bring in Council Trainer next, then we'll go back to Abel Wind after that. John, do you want to go on ahead there?
Thanks very much, Chair. And Jerry's touched on one of the questions I was going to ask around the network capacity. Obviously, it's all well and saying that we've got a renewable project, but is there the capacity within the system for that generation to actually follow through and actually benefit people? Two other questions, Chair, if you'd indulge me. One is around the site and the size. Obviously, you're saying that there's a limited number of sites within the Muirmunna Down area, as you've shown us there from your own grass. You had a site possibly in Slieve Croob and a site on further past. What was the determining factors for you to actually propose a site where it is in the Mourns as opposed to the other sites that would be available? And the last one, Chair, is obviously there's talk around policies that are in the pipelines. I have to go by policy, which is there, I suppose, as a representative. It's not my job to actually bring forward the policy. That's up to the Assembly. And we're supposed looking at this year in the framework of the 2010 to 2020 energy framework. And within that, obviously, as was rightly pointed out, there was a target for 40%. Now, as you've rightly pointed out, there's 85% of our renewables at the minute are coming from wind power. Is there an impetus on us to actually continue with the development of wind, or should we not be looking at diversifying our renewable generation to such as solar farms, offshore wind, and other technologies as they become available? Are you know, what you're, I suppose what I'm asking is, you know, you're putting it to us as if, you know, wind is the only way we're going to achieve our targets, but should we not be diversifying and looking for alternatives as well as wind to ensure that we can maintain our areas of Iceland natural beauty and not have that sort of detrimental impact on the environment?
Thank you, John. There's a number of questions there between yourself and Jerry, and maybe I could hand back to Abba Winner. Before I do that, could maybe remind elected members, wherever you are speaking, if we can turn our cameras on if possible, would be useful. Thank you. So we'll be back to Thomas and Tamsin to try and answer those questions.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you everyone for the questions. I suppose turning to the transboundary query in the first instance, I don't think that was something that was previously raised with us during the meetings, but yes, I can confirm that Louth County Council were consulted as part of the application, and they have responded previously to the application, and I believe there's an expanded consultation with them at the moment. The previous consultation raised no objection to the scheme. In terms of grid connection then, so the process for obtaining the grid connection is that upon receipt of planning permission, you apply to NIE and they dictate where the application will connect to and how it will connect. We've had some engagement with them and we understand that it will go to the Monk's Hill Road substation. In terms of how the connection, as I say, is delivered, that's really NIE will dictate that, but ultimately the cost of that lies with ABO Wind. In terms of site selection, the site selection process is very, very detailed. As I've noted there, we've been working on the project for around 10 years at this stage in order to understand all of the constraints. I think as per sort of one of the maps that we had shown there, the likes of Slieve Gullion, Slieve Croob, in terms of wind speed, in terms of topography, et cetera, logistically, it would be very, very difficult to deliver a wind farm in those locations. So that was part of the reason why the likes of those sites would have been knocked out. But as Thomas has said, it's quite a significant amount of constraints that we need to take into account. And as the maps show, the site of Grogandoo is set back from the Mourne and isn't within the main Mourne area. The final point just in relation to wind and I suppose why onshore wind. You're correct, onshore wind is not the only solution for delivering renewables. But as we have seen demonstrated by the 48%, onshore wind produced 85% of that. And the reason for that is that onshore wind is one of the most advanced technologies, one of the most easily deployable and one of the cheapest technologies. And that's why it will continue to be quite the significant lion's share of renewables moving forward.
Thank you, Tamsin, for that. OK, if we can move on, I think Councillor Stokes and Councillor Tinley. Councillor Stokes next.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Just a question. I wonder if possible to ask who actually owns ABO Wind, Chair? Possible. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to take in Councillor Tinley before we go back to ABO. Councillor Tinley.
Yes, thank you, Chair. And this is for Thomas. And my apologies if this has already been covered, Chair, because I missed the first couple of minutes of the visuals and I got distracted. But my question, Thomas, is could you just remind us when the former proposal at 125 metres, you just remind us what the visual impact radius of that was and also what the new measurement is, visual impact radius, now that the proposal is to stick another 57 feet on top of that. Please.
Thank you, Jonathan. I'll actually take in Councillor Clark there as well. Willie, do you want to go on ahead?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Just it was touched upon there about other technologies and that. Did they consider offshore wind turbines at any stage, and particularly after probably the 2017 refusal? Did they consider maybe looking at offshore? Just in regards to following up on that, then, Chair, what discussions had you with the planning officers in regards to your application, just to get a bit of a flavour of the discussions? You know, was it highlighted to you, the officers, that it's very unlikely that you would get an approval on the application? Or what sort of discussions did you have in regards to this?
Thank you. And Willie, so Thomas and Thomas, with questions there from Councillor Stokes, Tinley and Clark. Are you happy to take those now?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Councillor Tinley. The actual ZTV scope from it being revised from the larger scheme to the reduced scheme, I don't have to hand. We can obviously follow up in writing. But what is key, Councillor, that whenever we had reduced it from 12.10 to 8, because we had increased the turbine height, the actual key impact being from the AOMB that we were most concerned about still remained sub 30%, and that was the figure that we had provided at the 2017 presentation also.
Thank you. Just coming back on the couple of queries, the other couple of queries then. So in terms of the ownership of ABO Wind, we are a subsidiary. The Northern Ireland business is a subsidiary of ABO Wind AG, a large-scale wind farm developer based in Germany. We're a subsidiary of that company. Turning then to Councillor Clark and other technologies and what has been considered. We don't develop any offshore wind. We only develop onshore wind. That is our primary business, along with the likes of storage and solar also. So it's not something that we as a business considered. Finally, the last point then was in relation to discussions with planners. I'm not 100% sure is that council planners or DFI planners?
I would say both.
So in the lead up to the original application, prior to submitting back in 2015, there were some initial discussions had with planners and various consultee views inputted into that, but nothing directly with the council planners.
Okay, thank you for that. Can we move on then, Councillor Savage, you're in next there.
Yes, Chair. Mine relates really to the consultees, and one of the key ones obviously would be a group that does superb work in the Mourns, and that's the Mourns Heritage Trust. And I appear to be getting conflicting signals as to what their response was in the consultation. Could you maybe give me a bit of guidance as to what this organisation that does superb work in relation to the heritage of the Mourns, what their view was in relation to your consultation process and what their feedback was on it?
Thank you, Michael. I'm going to take in a couple more councillors as well. Councillor Gibbons, do you want to come back in there?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. It's just to clarify, Tamsin, if you can, you said a wee bit earlier on, and I could be wrong, I could have heard you wrong, but that you would be, that ABO would be happy with a public inquiry if that's the road that you had to go down.
Thank you, Mark. I'll maybe take in Councillor McMurray there as well.
Thank you, Chair. Thank ABO Wind for their presentation, but just in the last summary slide there, just sort of two things sort of popped into my head. There was a sort of there was a reference made there that it wasn't upland, so I was just sort of curious as to what sort of the classification or what sort of altitude upland maybe merited. And secondly, there was forgive me if I get the terminology precisely, but it sort of mentioned that there wasn't sort of overly sensitive or low sensitivity. I was just wondering again what sort of criteria was as it was applied to sort of come to that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Andy. I see we've just got one more councillor there, in a Councillor Hamlin, if you want to come on ahead there, and then we can bring Abel in after it.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Just something, forgive me if I've missed this, but I think the question was asked about the view from the Carlingford County Louth side. I didn't notice any graphics in the presentation with regard to that, and you know, I think potentially that should have been included, even though you're saying the County Louth Council are happy with it. It, to me, is a glaring omission in the graphics. And I would have to say as well, I don't think the graphics were very clear. Maybe it's because we are doing this online and it is difficult to show presentations. But, you know, I just think in reality, in real life, that those turbines sitting on top of the Mourns would be a lot more prominent than what those graphics are suggesting.
Thanks very much. And okay, Thomas and Tazan, hopefully that's the last for four elected members there that have some questions, if you'd be happy to answer those now.
Absolutely, thank you. First of all, Councillor Savage, thank you for the query in relation to the Mourns Heritage Trust. I suppose to be clear, the Mourns Heritage Trust weren't a statutory consultee. They weren't formally consulted as part of the application. We engaged with them, but I suppose to be clear, they didn't express neither support nor objection for the site. Merely we went along and presented to them in terms of what the proposal would look like. They haven't expressed a view as to whether they support or object to the site. That's not their role to do that. They're not a consultee. In terms of Councillor Gibbons saying, yes, you're correct, we would be happy to support a motion for a public inquiry. As I say, we have been working on the site for nearly a decade at this stage. I'm so very, very happy that we would move forward to a public inquiry to explore all of the issues. As I say, my only concern would be that given the time that has been spent so far and given the trajectory towards 2030, that would be an expedited process.
Councillor McMurray, just to pick up on the uplands point, when you look at the topographical survey for Grove and Dhu climbing up to Broken Skay, you're between a range of 250 to 362 AOB, and therefore the foothills of the climbing Mourns up until when you get to Steve Donard at a peak of the 850 AOD. So that's what that means by the uplands versus the lower lands, and indeed the DEA boundary that we showed in the topographical survey, where you had the dark red going down into the lime green. That's what that visual showed. In terms of Councillor Hanlon in respect to the visuals, I completely agree with you. I think it's when we went to the shared screen facility that the backdrop sky has dumbed down what that visual is. But I am happy to send that PDF through. It is, there's been a series of presentations given to councillors, and I think when it was being done, there wasn't any issue. But if I can go back to the comment that was made by Councillor Byrne at the beginning, I think it would have been helpful of all the members that, you know, that's four viewpoints that were provided, but there is a comprehensive set of photomontage, including from Louth, that can be shared with members at high resolution and PDF, and we can make that available to the planning team if they don't already have them.
Okay, Thomas and Townsend, I think that's all those questions answered, I suppose.
I don't think my question was answered. Why should that not be included in tonight's presentation?
Thank you. And Thomas or Townsend, do you want to come back on that?
The reason it wasn't included in tonight's presentation was the viewpoints that we had chosen to include were just a number of the viewpoints which actually had been raised by council previously. So that's why we'd focus in on those ones. But as I say, that's not everything that has been submitted in the planning application. There's probably 20, 25 montages submitted in there as part of the package. We just focused in on the ones that have been raised by council previously.
Okay, thank you for that. And I suppose maybe just for the clarity of elected members, I'm a board member on Mourne Heritage Trust, and there was a couple of other board members here as well. And I noticed there's a policy that the Trust don't support or object to planning applications, but I suppose we can't read anything into that either way. But that's just the policy of the board. It isn't the case that they aren't objecting or aren't supporting. It's just simply the policy across the board. I know Willie and Glyn would back me up on that as well. So if we're content then to... Oh, sorry, Andy, you think your question wasn't addressed there? Councillor McMurray had asked a question about, I think, the sensitivity of the areas.
Yeah, it was given a low sensitivity from that last slide, and again, I was just sort of curious as to how that was arrived at, and also just on the point of uplands, I mean, it was actually asking what the criteria of height was. I mean, it's all very good saying that Slieve Donner is 800 and something metres high, and that this here is 300 and something metres high, but, you know, I mean, surely there must be these aren't the same height as Slieve Donner, but surely there must be a more of a specific criteria for measuring something as uplands. Thank you, Chair.
Abel, do you have a comment to that, or are you content?
No, it's just the comment from Councillor McMurray. I don't think there was the term sensitivity used. I think the last slide, the second bullet point, was the landscape impact is not significant and not the uplands, and I think the reference to that, Councillor, was really to do with, we accept that there's landscape impact, but that particularly from the AOMB, it's less than 30%, and hence why we say that those other benefits outweigh that impact, that is the byproduct of development.
Okay, Thomas and Thompson, thank you for that. And we're now going to move on to the next item of the agenda, which is a presentation from the Mourne's AOMB objectors to the application. I think we have Conor McGreevy and Dawson Stelfox here this evening. Again, like the previous speakers, you've got 10 minutes to make your presentation, and then we'll move on to questions from the floor. Conor, I think you might be on mute. Did you start talking there?
I am, Chair, sorry.
Don't worry, we'll not start your 10 minutes until you get kicked off.
Is that screen now shared?
It is indeed, yep, that's us.
Okay, hopefully...
You're very welcome. That's the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having us again for the third time in 5 years. And I hope everyone's safe during the global pandemic. Certainly this is not what I plan to do in the middle of it. But I'm Conor McGreevy, Mourne AOMB against wind farms here, and we've been campaigning against this development for the last 5 years. Tonight, we are... Sorry, Chair, I'm having technical issues. Can you see my screen?
Yeah, We can, yep, just the first slide.
And it does not seem to be moving, is it?
Sometimes it can be a delay, is it maybe, but we can see it on this side.
It's not working my side, it's not moving.
You're okay, take your time.
Can I check, Sarah, do we have a copy of the presentation that we could share via our screens? And that?
Yeah, I'm just going to try and get it. There seems to be some feedback as well. If everybody else can make sure that their microphones are muted.
Laura, I'm just wondering if maybe there's a, because there's so many people on, maybe if we all turn our videos off, maybe that might help for the bandwidth. With just a thought.
That normally shouldn't be necessary, Catherine. Let's just wait and see how it goes.
It worked earlier on.
Yeah, we did a test earlier.
Sorry, Sarah, can you tell me what you're seeing there on your side?
Yeah, we can see that in that first slide, more on LOMB against wind farms.
Okay. Can still see the full slide. Sorry, I'm on two screens here, so I think that's probably my problem.
I can see the first slide on the next slide. Sorry, Sarah, that you communicate there. You know this better than me.
You'd have to swap your display. Yeah, that's you now.
Right, I'll just do it from this, if that's okay. Okay, sorry, Chair, and sorry, members, about this bit of a technical glitch. So we're, you know who I am, and we've been campaigning against this now for the last number of years. I just want to go back very quickly here before I'm going to pass over to Dawson Stelfox very quickly here. But I just wanted to hit some of the key points that have come up over the last 5 years. And we've heard it again tonight, about 60,000 tonnes of CO2 and being equivalent to 45,000 cars. That figure needs challenged and robustly challenged. The EPA in America, when if you type in 60,000 tonnes, it uses a figure of 22 miles per gallon. It would end up equating to 11,759 cars. So I'm not sure where this equivalence of cars is coming from, and I think we should be challenging that. It should also be remembered that 60,000 tonnes of carbon is equivalent to 0.2% of our greenhouse gases. So this is not a significant contribution in our estimation. And that could be easily achieved by replacing 2.2 million incandescent light bulbs, LEDs. Nearly Moran has over 700,000 of those. So we can achieve this carbon reduction, and we'll be full support of that. Also, you know, as a very simple 7.7% of landfill waste reduced, we get the same annual reduction of CO2 in Northern Ireland. And it should be noted that we have increased, you know, over the last 5 years up to 33.98%. We've increased by 33.98%. So this is achievable to get the same carbon reductions as this. ABU have stated that they're not reliant on incentives or subsidies. That's fair enough. We know wind farms aren't reliant on that in the initial development stage. But they do go for contract for differences. They go for various grants and supports through government once they're operational. That's fact. Only 68 months ago, it was revealed that £1 million of Bill Payer's money was used to fund wind farms for not generating wind. ABO like to play on this at their local. They're based in Lisburn. That's okay. They say that they'll use local suppliers. Well, they can't even use their own accountant in Northern Ireland. They go to Edinburgh for their own accountant. They also have said us in many slides that there'll be 22 people, that there's 22 people employed in Northern Ireland. That's not true if you go by their annual accounts, which are publicly available in Companies House. It's 7 people. So these are the type of things that we keep getting fired out, and it needs robustly challenged. We also hear about rates, the £390,000 of rates or £350,000 of rates, depending on what slide you get to see. The reality is Northern Ireland has a policy on wind farms and how rates are calculated. It's based on projections of profit. So at the initial set now, ABO will present their projections on profit. After 3 years, that gets reassessed, and the actual is then used for setting the rates going forward. ABO Wind, as we found out tonight, they are a subsidiary of ABO Wind in Germany, partly owned by two families over there and the Frankfurt government. And the reality is, under accountancy policies, you can shift profits you can use management charges and dividends to move this money around, and it's on their annual accounts and publicly available. In 2018, they shifted at $1.1 million. So I wouldn't bank on rates, and rates on their planning should not be used anyway, but certainly one to bear in mind. The community fund of £130,000 per year, we know that half that's been promised to the GAA. I can tell you now here tonight that we've analysed all the responses to the consultation online, and of the GAA members, of which there's many within our organisation, 85% of the GAA members in Clonduff are opposed to this here. So this application and this community fund has totally torn this community apart, and that's what this German investor has done. We also know that there's promises made to other organisations, and there's huge question marks and legals now involved in all that too. So we need to be very careful whenever we see them figures. There's also, we hear about there's no negative impact on house prices. Well, I put it down at the bottom. Hopefully you can read it. If not, you get the slides afterwards. But there is a study in 2013 by Gibbons, not Councillor Gibbons, I should add, that, you know, in the average wind farm of 11, the house prices will fall by 5% within 2 kilometres, 3% within 4 kilometres, and 1% up to 14 kilometres. But the economics of this, as you see there at the bottom, should be about £12 million based on an average house value of £140,000. Highly technical. It's a big research paper that would have to be analysed, but there it is. I also want to touch on the tourism, and not too much, because I've heard in the past the tourism NI, people have challenged us, the tourism NI are not objecting to this here. Well, the fact is, they're no longer a statutory consultee, and they do not approve of wind farms in terms of signage. And that's all in the planning portal 2015, where they had to put in a very strong rebuttal to ABO's assertions of what they termed an NITB report, which actually wasn't. It was a Mintel report. So that's also there available, but we haven't got time tonight to go through it line by line, and I'm happy to go through it with people. The Moran Heritage Trust, one of the councillors there asked that question, and I'm glad it was, because Moran Heritage Trust are not in favour or against this, which would be the factual position. So we need to be very mindful of that too, because they do not make any comments on planning applications. But what I will say in tourism, Faults to Ireland, the visitor attitudes on environment carried out in 2007-2012 shows that there's been an increase on those same wind farms would have a very negative impact on their visit and chance of return. That's not the 21% in 2012. I don't think Nuremberg, Morne and Downing can afford to have 21% saying they're not going to return to the area. I think we need more people to return to the area. Nuremberg, Morne and Downing has two of the strongest categories for people wanting to come to an area, coastal and mountains, 91% and 83%. So I think we need to be very mindful of that. And also that report there too stated that 36% of people had a very strong negative attitude towards wind farms near coastal areas. And this one will be seen from the coastal area, and we've seen that tonight. It will be seen from the coolies. It does have a cross-border dimension. Also in Scotland there, 25% of hill walkers state that they would be that they would avoid wind farms, and that was a 2016 study, and again is available if anyone wants it. In Wales, they don't put wind farms in their key tourist sites, of which I believe the Mourns is. It's one of our 9 key destinations, and something we should be promoting is the green tourism aspect. Finally for me, I've got 6 points here. Planning policy reasons are enough in their own right. I firmly believe they are, and that's all that should be considered here tonight. And the Minister today refused in the Spurns LMB development today, and I think this council should be consistent with that. Environmental.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, you've got less than 3 minutes left, just to give you a heads up, okay?
Well, Chair, I'm going to pass on now to Dawson Stelfox here.
Thanks, Connor. So I'm representing the people who use the Mourns on a daily basis. The mental and physical benefits of being active in nature are now well known and well documented, accentuated by the impact of the COVID lockdown. And that slide in front of you shows a survey that was carried out, which shows this new cohort of people discovering the immense value to their lives of the natural environment. And they're staying with it, testified by the numbers of people in the car parks. And the trail infrastructure is now under pressure. The Western Mourns is one of the key areas of this new group of people have turned to, easily accessible and achievable summits. Hen Mountain is now one of the most visited peaks in the Mourns. And the key to that is being in nature, not in the shadow of an industrial wind farm complex dominating the skyline of those great views west from the Mourns towards Slieve Gullion, another AONB. Throughout the developer's visual impact study, they have tried to make the case that somehow the Western Mourns is not as important, not as valuable as the Eastern Mourns, trying to tell us what is valuable about our landscape. That's patently not true. There is no hierarchy of importance in all the Mourne A and B character. From Slieve Croob down to Slieve Rousley, Donard to Binion, every part of the Mourne is integral to that and crucial to its character. And to claim otherwise is dangerous and disingenuous. Just like the statement tonight that the impact of this is not significant and this is not uplands. And this is a sort of a cumulative degradation policy where the whole is no longer the sum of its parts. The Western Mourne, by any rational assessment Cruachan do, is just as valuable as the Eastern Mourne. Move on to the next page, Connor. In the, also in the developer's tourism statement, they have
Dawson, 1 minute left.
Made that land has only a tourism value if it's part of a paid interest, a paid to enter tourist attraction, and that is patently absurd. The value, including the economic value, is for an open, undeveloped wild landscape, and that's widely recognised as the basis of immense economic value to your region, councillors. The UK average of undeveloped uplands is 18%. In Northern Ireland, it's only 12%. So we are already impoverished of this valuable resource. Please don't add to this impoverishment by supporting the industrialisation of the wildlands. And even if you don't listen to us, listen to the people who have prepared the policy. Look at the statement from the Natural Environment Division of DIRA, who conclude that this proposal is completely unacceptable in all planning terms and you should be rejecting it. So, councillors, I would urge you, please don't smash the golden egg you have in the Mourne A and B and reject this, what I would say is an outrageous proposal. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dawson and Connor. That was very useful and informative. Thank you. Okay, if we move to members, Councillor Clark, I see you've got a P and I'm not taking any proposals until all the presentations have been heard and the applicant and the objectors had the chance to rebut anything that's been previously said. Councillor Traynor, you have a question there.
Thanks very much, Chair. I suppose, and I hate to do this, I'm going to be hard again. I've been hard
all the time. Sorry, John, can I come in for 2 seconds? Can we maybe unshare that screen there? If that's possible. I'm not sure if it was Connor put that back up or Sarah. Just give us a second, John, then we can get...
No problem.
Thank you, Connor. Okay, John, go on ahead.
Thanks, Chair. No, Chair, I suppose I've been hardball with Bafanin, I've been hardball with Albo, and Connor, I'm going to be a wee bit devil's advocate now, give me yourselves, sorry, but I have to tease out every bit of information I can. I suppose the first thing is maybe to go on one of the latter points there in the slides around the False Ireland report, and you rightly pointed to the False Ireland report and the statistics are based on that and what they've done in the survey. I suppose the first thing I'd ask is, you know, would you see that figure changing in today's context, as in 2020, both those reports, well, one's 13 years old, one's 8 years old. Would that figure, do you believe, change given the climate crisis that we are currently in? That would be one question. And the second question would be around, because obviously a lot is around the siting and the type of structures here in the wind farms. Would the AONB against wind farms be against a different project, a different renewable project in a similar area? For instance, if there was like a solar farm, would that be looked on as more favourably in keeping them and trying to identify with the local area and the geological and ecological nature of the area would be the second question, Chair. And the last question is around, because we are hearing about the opposition to this and the support to this tonight, and I suppose from your group's views, what do you see as the long-lasting impact that this will have on the community in regards to those who are in favour or those who are against? What is the long-lasting impact? Because we're hearing a lot about the benefit to the community, but as we know, decisions like this here, they can almost tear families apart, so it would be good to get the view from the group on that as well.
Thank you. John, do you want to come back in there, Connor, maybe, or Dawson?
Okay. I think if I maybe ask Dawson to take the first question.
Okay. John, I'll respond on that. I suppose that we look to areas which are in advance of us in terms of what's been happening in Scotland is the most obvious one, and that in Scotland the policy has shifted and changed and is now moving, as indicated earlier, towards offshore wind, and that's precisely because of the negative impact that onshore wind farms have already had on the Scottish economy in terms of tourism, and one of its huge benefits, which is people going for walking, for sightseeing, for enjoying nature. So policy is changing, John, I would say, Councillor, but the policy is changing away from land-based, upland-based wind farms to offshore wind farms and other forms of renewables, precisely because the negative impacts on things which are long-term sustainable businesses and economics for upland areas is now being recognised. And I would suggest that the Mourns fits into that category rather than somewhere which is suitable for large land-based, shore-based wind farms. So, yes, by all means, let's look to changing policy, but let's look at the example in Scotland and Wales as to governments protecting their tourism industry. And outdoor active tourism is by seen by any measure as increasing and bringing increasing benefits to rural economies. And that's true in the Mourns, and it's certainly true in Scotland and Wales.
Okay, Chair, on the second question there about arguments against other projects such as solar PV, I can't really comment on that. Our group came together as an opposition group against, I suppose, wind farms in the Mourns AOMB, and that's what we're about. I would imagine any other proposals would certainly take a look at it and see, that, you know, does it fit against our proposals that we're fighting for. The long-lasting impact, Councillor Trainer, on the community, I think it's already devastating that this German-owned company has come in to Hilltown and divided the community in such a way. Play to the same rule book, and I was actually speaking to Friends of the Earth today who are opposed to this development in themselves too, and they were saying it's the same old rule book in terms of they find a community group or they find a community club such as the GAA club in this instance, and they try to put a wedge through it. It's going to be hard to heal. I think there's going to have to be a lot of work done to heal once this goes, but the figures speak for themselves. There's nearly 3,000 objections have gone in, although not all on the portal at this minute in time, of which we're approaching 76% now of those are opposed. And as I said earlier on, we calculated it on GAA members, and it's 85%. So the community is well divided in this here, but they're divided in favour of being against this development.
Thank you for that, Connor and Dawson. Okay, I think Councillor McMurray, you're in next there.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mr. McGreevy. Thank you, Mr. Stelfox. I suppose really I would just like to get the same questions that I gave to the ABO in regards to the sort of the definition of upland. You know, in your opinion, would this sort of meet the criteria of an upland? And also, I suppose, really to elaborate on whether, we were told it wasn't so much a there'd be no impact, but there'd be low impact. So again, suppose really, you know, what would the impact, what would the sensitivity be, just of such a wind farm, you know, for the Mourns. So thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor. I'm quite happy, Chair, to take that question. First of all, I suppose to say we've submitted a very detailed response by a member of the Institute of Chartered Institute of Landscape to the submission. And that's in with our submission, and that goes through every viewpoint in detail, and it looks at the impact as we see it. And I would say fairly clearly we do not think the visual impact assessment as submitted by the applicant is objective or professional or reasonable. And to try and state that 142.5 metre high turbines in an upland area will not have a significant effect, a visual impact effect on that, is quite ludicrous, really. And it's been shown as that, as I say, by the statutory body, the Natural Environment Division. We've submitted a map which shows the two designations in this area, LCA 75, the Mourne Mountains, and LCA 72, Slieve Rousley, where the actual application is situated. And those are designated as high sensitivity, which is the highest level of sensitivity you can get. And the vast majority of that LCA 72, the Slieve Rousley one, is affected by the visual impact of these wind farms. And even if it is only 30% of the Mourne one, which is what the claim is, 30% is a very significant proportion of one of our most valuable landscapes, which is being adversely affected in terms of visual impact. So the only reason how the submitted visual landscape gets down to sort of a very low impact is by underplaying the visual impact of these turbines. And we have submitted our alternative, what we believe to be much more objective rationale, using the same process that the developers have used, and we're putting that out to the Department of Infrastructure, who will be doing the assessment. And we already know that their own experts in the Department of the DERA department have actually come to the same conclusion, and they say that this impact is totally unacceptable within it. Sleeve-Rousley, Glugandu is by quite clearly by any definition part, an integral part of the Mornay ONB, and it is uplands. It is open landscape. It is not enclosed. It's not farmland. It is upland environment. And both in height terms and in the nature of the terrain terms, then for those of you who haven't been there, I would recommend that you go and you see that this is a valuable upland environment. It's also crucial to the interlinking views between our two AOMBs in this area, and you've, within your own council area, you've got the Sleaf-Glugan AOMB, and the interlinking views from the Mourne AOMB across the Sleaf-Glugan AOMB are really crucial for both of those AOMBs in terms of how they're perceived by people who are there and people who are looking into them. And this application is right in the middle of those views, looking west from the Mourne AOMB towards the Sleaf-Glugan AOMB. So this is very clearly upland development, councillor. It's industrial development in the uplands, and it does materially affect the quality of this AOMB, two landscape character areas, special area of conservations, and it is so far against policy. I mean, your planning officer spoke very clearly and professionally earlier on. This is okay. So clearly outside policy that it shouldn't be entertained at all.
Thank you, Dawson. Thank you, Connor. And we've got three more questions there from, and we'll take them at the one time, if that's okay. Councillor Tinley, you're in first there.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Question for Connor. Connor, listen, you mentioned the GEA there in your presentation, as did Thompson in hers. Now, Thompson talked about the GEA being the recipients of an ABO planning application. They picked up the tab for that. You mentioned a figure there of 85%. Can you just clarify, was that 85% of people who corresponded in relation to the planning application? And if that is the case, what is that actual 85% in real numbers, or were you referring to 85% of club members based on your research?
Thank you, Jarvis. Connor, if you're happy to hold off, I'll bring in Councillor Enright and Councillor Sharp, and we can be on them at one time, if that's okay, just for expediency. Councillor Enright, you're in next there.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to ask Dawson Stelfox. He's referred a lot to Scotland. Is he aware that Scotland is currently bumping along at nearly 100% renewables now for much of the year, and that 70% of the energy in Scotland comes from onshore wind farms, and that a majority of the onshore wind farms in Scotland are in AONBs?
Thank you. Cadogan, Councillor Sharvin, do you want to come in next there as well?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. You know, I note from some of the presentation around percentage of those for and against, and from my own emails that I have received, it's like Brexit all over again. It's 52%, 48% from the correspondence I have had. But I just want to touch on that obviously the number of turbines that have been applied for over the last 5 years have certainly reduced to 8 but increased in size. I just want to get a view from the group if there is any opinion on a wind turbine ever being placed in the location that's being proposed, and if that is acceptable, is there a number of turbines that you would accept and in size?
Thank you. Gareth, there's sort of three different questions there from Mr. Tinley, Enright and Sharvin, maybe Connor or Dawson, if you maybe try and address those, please.
Yeah, to try our best here. Certainly, Councillor Timmy's there on the GAA matter. 85% represents the consultation responses to the planning portal. So what we did, a couple of club members in our group analysed every consultation response and went down through each one that was a club member and worked out that it's 85%. I can't tell you hard numbers in terms of what that relates to in members, but I know it's a significant amount of members, and there certainly is turmoil within that club as a result. That's hopefully that answers your question, Councillor. I'll leave Councillor Emmerich's question because that's for Dawson, and I'll just answer Councillor Sharvin's question all over again around the Brexit. I certainly I can relate to that, Councillor. For us, we're set up to oppose wind farms in the AOMB. We believe that with only 26 to 28% of our lands in Northern Ireland is actually protected, that our AOMBs are sacred. And I believe that that is now being backed by the Minister today in terms of the Spurns decision. And I believe that the AOMB has a lot more in terms of our economic tourism value and long-term mental health value and all that that the Outdoor Recreation Report is able to touch on, that we don't actually need to sacrifice that. The reality is that this will be very, very small in terms of what it does for Northern Ireland's energy mix. It will be a tiny, tiny fraction. We're talking less than 1%, probably even less than 0.5%. So I don't believe that this scale is appropriate at all. But what I would say to your question around what would be the acceptable number is zero. And the reason why I would say zero is we've watched ABO Wind up in Castle Gore. They went for 6, they revised it to 4, they came back and got 7, and then they sold it off to Capital Dynamics Private Equity. So that the developer can be trusted, and we should be saying no to them because we don't know where they go next.
Okay.
Councillor Enright, then, if I can answer your question. I suppose we could trade figures all night in terms of what percentages of things and what, but Scotland's a very different place. The Mourne's, by any standard, is our premier mountain landscape in Northern Ireland. I don't think anybody here would doubt that. I'm sure nearly Mourne Down councillors certainly wouldn't challenge that. It is the best we have. AOMBs in Scotland are different. They're actually under slightly different legislation. But also in Scotland, they have national parks. So the premier landscapes, the most special landscapes, are protected by another level of higher protection and beyond that. We don't have national parks in Northern Ireland. I don't want to get into the debate on that. It's not relevant to this. The point being that the Mournes are our most special landscapes. If you take the most special landscape in Scotland, they do not permit wind farms within those areas, so Cairngorms, Trossachs, places like that. So it is about protection of the best landscapes that we have. The Mournes are our best landscapes. They will be severely impacted upon, severely degraded by the scale of this proposal. And I think, you know, in Scotland, they're already recognising that they have already damaged their outdoor environment tourism in some areas by allowing too many wind farms. That will be the same, I would predict, that will be the same in Uri and Mourne in terms of the value, of the economic value to your district from outdoor activity tourism if you allow this to proceed.
Thank you, Dawson. Okay, we have one more member there, and then Councillor McAteer, and then after that then we can move on. Okay, Declan.
Yeah, I was just interested to hear from Dawson. Dawson, you still climb mountains, you do?
I do, but it's in the Mournes at the week. I was in the Mournes at the weekend, Councillor.
Well, I don't know what I was for. I could just ask what mountain range, you know, have you refused or declined to go back to because you could see a wind turbine from in recent years?
I can answer that very clearly. There were areas of Donegal which I used to love walking in South Donegal, below the Barnesmore Gap and around the Barnesmore Gap. And I took a deliberate decision I would not go back to those areas because, to my mind, they've been ruined by wind farm developments. So if you look at the area to the east of the Barnesmore Gap in Donegal, it is a wild mountain area and, in my opinion, so it's put me off going to large parts of Donegal, I have to say, Councillor. And there are also parts of Scotland that I wouldn't go to as well because of that. So I choose very carefully what mountain areas I go to. And I'm not, this is not about me. This is about the tens, hundreds of thousands of people who go walking and enjoy the environment. And it will put people off going.
So we take it then from you that in your contribution that you don't claim any mountain that you could see a wind turbine from?
No, we're talking about, I think you have to get in your head the scale of this, councillor. So there are many wind turbines around the foothills of the Mourns. They're farm-based ones, they're individual ones, they're generally 20, 30 metres in height. That's not so far beyond the scale of a church or a large forest or things like that. What we're talking about here is 142 metres in height. Somebody compared to the day with the height of the London Eye. These are enormous. These are not the things that fit into any landscape that we have. So please don't think that this is just another wind turbine that we have around the countryside. We have never objected to any of the individual farm-based ones which are around the Mourns at all. We don't go around objecting to wind turbines in general. But what we object to is this large-scale industrial exploitation of the landscape, which is to the detriment of things which are much more valuable to your economy in Newry and Mourne in the long term. And that's my urge, my plea to you tonight, is that think long-term sustainable in terms of the natural environment. Green energy should not be at the expense of nature, and that's what you're being asked to do tonight.
Okay, Dawson, thank you. Councillor Lewis, you're the last councillor in there, and then we're going to move on. Okay, you have a question?
Look, I'm sort of wanting to try and understand here what if we have to put one main objection.
Alan, your wee microphone must be up the top. You put it down a bit, you're a wee bit quiet.
Sorry, Tim. I'm all right now, do I?
On your head, Alan.
It's actually, by the way, Alan, I've
I get you now.
I've done this before too, that's you now.
Sorry about that. No, look, I'm just seeking to try and understand what would the main objection be? If you have to choose one massive objection to the wind farms, would it simply be because that you don't like the look of them or because that they're too big? What would be the main crust, Dawson, though the main number one reason why there would be such objection to these?
Councillor, I think it's fairly clear. It's the visual impact on them, which will be to the detriment of the other main uses of the mountain areas. The conclusion that the Natural Environment Division came with, and it's in the strategy consultee document, which is on the portal, wind energy development is totally inappropriate within this unique mountain landscape, which is of the highest sensitivity to change and is of outstanding visual amenity value. I agree with that statement, and that's the key. That, to me, is the key reason why this should not be granted permission.
Thank you, Dawson. I had said we were finished there, but I think we've got two questions. As long as Councillor Savage and Councillor Owen keep it very, very quick, I'll accept them. Councillor Savage?
Mine relates really to what Dawson had said previously, Chair, in relation to the potential for developing hill walking, and particularly in the Western Mourns. Just really to get your view on how big you view that potential to be and how much of a damaging impact this could have on us fulfilling that potential.
Thank you, Michael. I'll take in Councillor Owen as well, Dawson and Connor, before you bring us back in. Councillor Owen?
Okay, can you hear me all right? This is, it's just sort of maybe a supplementary to Alan's in a point. We're obviously, I've got to be sort of devil's advocate in the sense of looking at everything on both sides of the coin. So what do you suggest then, knowing that we've got a climate emergency coming around the corner and a lot of us are torn over this, you know, what do you suggest then in order to be trying to look after the climate emergency and doing everything that we can where that's concerned? What do you suggest then, you know, it would be an alternative? So, yes, you're telling us what you don't want, but what do you think, just totally yourselves, what do you think would be an alternative to try and plug this gap? Thanks very much.
Thank you, Catherine. If we can keep our answers brief, that would be great, folks.
Okay, well, I'll answer very briefly. Councillor Savage, in terms of the numbers of people, the percentage went up in the survey that we did, somewhere from 28% of the population to 63% of the population getting active outdoors. 51% of those people said that they were going to continue it. It wasn't just a lockdown phenomenon. And we're seeing that in the Mourns every day, every weekend, the numbers of people that are out now. So how does that turn into economics? Simple things, farmers are charging money for parking cars and fields, and that's happening all around the Mourne at the moment, so that's money coming in to rural areas. There's accommodation, which will, you know, once we get past this crisis, accommodation providers, outdoor activity providers, people apply for hospitality. There's a huge range of areas, and this is well established in the economic benefits of this, many, many studies showing and this. That's the real value of the Mourne to your council area in terms of that small scale, spread over a whole area, lots of people getting their livings from looking after visitors and local people who want to come and use it. So that's the economic pattern for areas like you have. You have the best mountain area in Northern Ireland. In terms of the things, I'm not an expert in all the various forms of renewability, but I would say from looking at it, what most governments now do is they want to get a mix. They want to get a mix of onshore, offshore winds. They want a mix of solar, water power, tidal power, wave power. And the key to it is getting that mix. So an over-concentration of land-based wind is not in anybody's interest.
Yeah, Chairperson, can I just add there to that? I mean, the energy mix is very, very important. 85% of our renewables coming from onshore wind is not a good way of going forward. We certainly need to look at the hydrogen economy, which the Department of Economy and Westminster are pushing heavily in terms of research and development. And we've already seen the Wright bus developing the first hydrogen bus. And I have to welcome that because 23% of our greenhouse gases, according to NISRA, come from transport. 27% of our greenhouse gases come from agriculture. Energy supply is 15%. So again, the silver bullet is not wind turbines in the Mourne. Certainly, whenever it's only going to contribute such a small amount. This council, your council, our council, support micro generation in their policies, and that's on top of businesses and homes, solar PV. These are things that we should be looking at, things that can be easily integrated. We also need to bear in mind that the Energy Report 2020 says that energy use has already declined 8.5% due to energy efficiency measures. None of that's ever mentioned whenever we look at individual wind farm applications.
Okay. Thank you, Connor, and thank you, Dawson, for that. We're going to move on now. In terms of Tamsin and Thomas, I'm going to invite you back. And at this point, it's clearly just to rebut any factual inaccuracies. We don't want, and we can't take a rehash of everything that's been said so far. Clearly, just if there's any factual inaccuracies that you'd like to address at this point, please. Tamsin or Thomas, are you still there?
Yes, we are indeed. There are several points. I'll pick up on three and then pass it to Tamsin. The poll of 85% of club members, in response to the councillor Sharvin, it was put that 85% with no hard numbers, but we just know it is, isn't evidence, members. Unless we actually see how that would be worked out, it would be hard to see that as being a sustainable argument. The one thing I would say is that the benefit has twice went through two different AGMs we've conducted, and twice the motion carried to accept the benefit. There are other GA clubs across the six counties that have turned benefits down for different developments. In this case, Clonduff accepted it.
Sorry, sir, can I just say for accuracy, that was Councillor Tinley, not Councillor Sharvin, that question was. Sorry, just for accuracy.
I beg your pardon. The second point relates to the DFI Minister's notification today to refuse the wind farm at Doraville in County Tyrone. That proposal, members, is 33 turbines at 130 megawatt. So to compare it with the 8 turbines, comparing apples and oranges. And last but not least, there was a point made there on hydrogen as being a new renewable target or new technology that can be used. Most hydrogen schemes are being produced co-located to wind farms where there is excess energy that is able to be stored and then used thereafter. Amazon.
Thank you. And just a couple of points I wanted to come back on as well in relation to the presentation. There currently is no contract for difference in Northern Ireland. It is indeed Northern Ireland. We didn't state anywhere that we had 22 employees in Lisburn. We said that that was across the island of Ireland. In relation to rates, I'm not really sure what the point was that Mr. McGreevy was trying to make, but in regards to accounts, but in any event, rates are payable on what's on the ground. So I think that point was irrelevant. In relation to tourism, I suppose I would bring you back to the slides in my presentation where it showed that the majority of installed capacity in Northern Ireland is in the northwest, i.e. Causeway Coast and Sperrins, and that hasn't had any impact on tourism. Similarly, in terms of Scotland, Whitley Wind Farm is 215 turbines, 539 megawatts, and is one of the most significant tourist attractions in the Central Belt.
Okay, Tamsin and Thomas, thank you for that. If I maybe come back then and invite Connor or Dawson, and again, just to rehash, to come in and sort of rebut anything that's been said, but again, we don't want to hold play again of your reasons why you're here this evening, just to rebut any factual inaccuracies, please.
Can I make two very brief points, Chair? Firstly, that and I've only had a brief reading of the Minister's decision today, but one of the prime reasons for it was because it's in an AONB, Area of Outstanding Natural Beauty, and it was the impact on that. And interestingly enough, on the people, the individual people who live in that area, their history, their culture, but also because it is a designated landscape. So that's the first point. The second point about this idea that wind farms are tourist attractions. The wind farm just mentioned by Tamsin, she did say it's in the Central Belt. It's in an area of low landing, low-lying, rounded hills. To compare it to the Mourne's is ludicrous, really. The Mourne's is our premier mountain landscape. I have to keep saying that because it's absolutely true. The wind farm she just referred to as a tourist attraction in Scotland is in a low-lying, forested, rounded hills, well away from the main mountains. So it's not by any means comparing like for oranges and lemons, I think it was said earlier on. So the Mourne's is our most special area of uplands. Leave that with you, councillors.
O'Connor, you're on mute there.
I'm usually very good at technology. I do apologize.
No worries, go ahead.
Nervous here. Just on that about the GAA, I can confirm here and now that the GAA are completely neutral on this application. They have an EGM, and that was what was passed. It's never been passed in an AGM to support this application. And also, the reason for it is that GAA rulebook, page one, you have to be GAA equals this, you cannot spoil community spirit. That's the reason why they're neutral.
Okay, thank you for that. I'll maybe now move on and invite Anthony, our Principal Planning Officer. If there's anything, Anthony, that you feel you'd like to clarify at this point?
No, thank you, Chair. We're fine.
Thank you, Anthony. Okay, is there anything from any other members you want to clarify in terms of information? Okay, so what I'd like to do is actually just thank Connor and Tamsin. Connor and Dawson and obviously Tamsin and Thomas for being here this evening, albeit virtually, and for your cooperation as we move through the week. I know it's just that bit more difficult whenever we are in a virtual format, but I do really appreciate how everybody's conducted themselves. Okay, so if we're content then to move on now to item 8, which is to discuss the Council's corporate response. Okay, Councillor Byrne, you're in first there.
Sorry, Chair, Councillor Clark had a P at the very beginning of the question.
Whereabouts is that, sorry, Sarah?
It was the one. You said you would wait to have to...
It's quarter past seven.
Yeah, but to be fair, Sarah, I don't think we can put P's at the start of the meeting. It needs to be on down whenever we get to that actual item. So we're now actually at item 8, which discusses the Council's corporate response. Then Councillor Byrne, you're in first, sir.
No, you...
Thanks, Chair. You know, I suppose.
Yes, please.
Yeah, if I'll allow Willie to come in and say a comment if he lets me have my first line out. Chair, at the start of the meeting, you said to leave proposals till the very end until everybody had spoke, and I think we all respected that. I think it would be very unfair if 40 councillors respected that advice at the start and listened to all the presentations, and then we all lose out in putting in a proposal when we've listened to absolutely everything. I don't think a proposal going in before Mourne Against Wind Farm even spoke is in line with what way the meeting was conducted. So I could have put it in at a minute past six, but you know, I wanted to listen to the whole debate first, as you had stated. So I respectfully waited, so I don't think mine should be superseded.
Yep, Councillor Clark, do you want to make a comment there?
Yeah, Chair, I'm not saying that the way you're conducting the meeting is any different from any other council meeting,
But usually the proposal does be put in, and then you wait till after all the questions and answers, and then you take the first proposal. That's generally the way the meetings are conducted. Any meeting I've been on online has been conducted in that manner. Indeed, you said that my proposal could wait until after all the presentations.
I think, to be fair, at the start of the meeting, I did outline how the meeting was going to go, and I did specifically ask Willie for no proposals, so we got to that part of the agenda, because it would have been the case that anybody could have proposed, and that's just, you know, I appreciate where you're coming from, but this is how I set out at the start of the meeting, how the meeting would be chaired, so I'm sorry if you feel that way. Councillor Byrne, do you want to proceed there?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. And just for the record, Councillor Clark, I genuinely waited till the end of the meeting as per the advice at the start, so I just really want that reiterated. To come in with the proposal on item 8. I just want to make a point before I make the proposal. I suppose Anthony had said at the very, very start that we are proposing to put a wind farm in an AONB. I just want to make it very, very clear for the minutes. We are not proposing to put a wind farm in an AONB. We are listening, scrutinising a proposal in front of us from Abba Wind to put a wind farm there. So certainly I don't want to put on the record that, you know, councillors are proposing anything. We're being responsible and we're asking all the questions of both sides, and then we'll make a decision to send as a consultation response at the end. Based on the comments that I made at the very, very start, Chair, you know, the information in front of us, trying to navigate the misinformation as well, listening to both sides, and I also want to thank both groups that are on here this evening. We've engaged over the last 3 weeks with each of them extensively, and it is very difficult for us to try and navigate a way forward that was actually accurate with the information that's put in front of us. For every report I could find in one thing, I could find a report saying the opposite, and I've said that to, you know, when I was speaking to Connor and Moran against the wind farms, and I was speaking to Abba Wind as well. So I think it would only be prudent that we propose that the Council writes to the Infrastructure Minister seeking clarity on whether this planning application warrants a public inquiry. And if so, we request that the Minister establishes a public inquiry and that we as a Council don't take a formal decision on this planning application.
Thank you, Councillor Byrne. Councillor Gibbons, are you next there?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, well, I have a counter-proposal. Can I go ahead with mine? Chair, is that okay?
Sorry, what was that, Councillor Gibbons?
Can you hear me okay? I have a counter-proposal, then can I go ahead with it?
You can't. At this moment in time, we have a proposal on the floor. And we've got Councillor McAteer is in there as a second in that proposal.
Yeah, for me. Second that, Chair. Thank you.
So I have a proposal and my proposal isn't going to be heard, Chair, no?
Maybe an amendment.
Okay. Councillor Gibbons, yep, go on ahead there with your proposal.
Is that okay, yeah? So my proposal is that I propose that this council have taken into consideration the planning policy statement from our own planning department and chief planning officer, that we respond to DFA as consultees with confidence and without contradiction that we oppose this renewed planning application.
Thank you, Councillor Gibbons. We've had the first proposal from Councillor Byrne that was seconded by Councillor McAteer, so that proposal will be put to the floor. First of all, apologies, Councillor Gibbons.
No problem, Chair. No problem.
Yeah. Is everybody in agreement with that first proposal coming from Pete Byrne?
Yes.
Chair, I have a question.
Yep, go on ahead, Willie.
The proposal coming from Councillor Byrne, I didn't really hear it clearly. It was something about if she warranted, if Minister Mallon warranted a public, thought she wanted a public inquiry, then we would hold one. It doesn't difference from what I was going to propose. And our Chair was that I was going to propose that DFA Minister Nicola Mallon holds an independent public inquiry. And that's exactly probably what Pete wants to see too, is that there's a robust interrogation of this proposal in an open forum. So I don't see why we can't agree on this proposal.
Sure. Councillor Byrne, do you want to repeat your proposal there for the members?
Yeah, listen, I've no problem. I think we are in agreement with this proposal. I do want a robust interrogation of what's in front of us. And I suppose I want to also respect the job that the Minister has and her making the decision to go to a public inquiry here. And, you know, and the Council, if we're going to give a steer, the steer is that we propose that we write to the Infrastructure Minister seeking clarity on whether this application warrants a public inquiry. And if so, we request that the Minister establishes a public inquiry and that the council don't take a formal decision on this plan and application. And I know, I suppose, Councillor Clark, we talked about, you know, a public inquiry before a decision is made and the process of that. And we all seen the application in Doraville today. And I, as a climate change spokesperson for our party, had actually travelled to Tyrone about a year ago to speak to the residents of Brockdairg. So I'm well aware of the issues on both sides and engaging with Mourne Against the Wind Farms as well. I'm well aware of it. But I do think there needs to be a robust interrogation in the same way as the Doraville application came about this morning. So that's why we're proposing what we have. And I think we're on the same page here.
Thank you, Pete. Okay, so we've got proposal in front of us. Can I maybe ask members, they're putting comments right down the instant message. It's actually quite difficult to follow. Just stick to the PDS and the Qs would make things a wee bit easier. So we have a proposal on the floor at this moment in time from Councillor Byrne, seconded by Councillor McAteer. Are people in agreement? Or
can I speak to the motion?
Sure. Is it a recorded vote, is it?
I want to speak to the motion.
Yeah. Councillor Tenney's looking for a clarification, first of all. Go on ahead, Jonathan.
Yes, Chair. Can you just confirm, Councillor Givens has come forward there with a counter proposal that I was happy enough to second. Do you have to go to Councillor Byrne's proposal first, and it's only in the event that there's not a unanimous decision on that, that you then go to Councillor Givens' motion? I always thought you took the counter proposal first, Chair.
No, we actually don't, Councillor Tenley. So Pete Byrne made a proposal that was seconded by Councillor McAteer, and obviously Mark came in and then made a separate proposal. We only deal with one proposal at a time, so we're voting on Pete's one first of all. Okay, Jarlath.
Thanks, Laura.
If you want to check it, it's a number 17.1 on our standing orders.
Oh, I've no need to check it, Laura. I believe you.
You believe me. Good stuff. Okay. Sorry, Councillor Gibbons, did you want further clarification as well, or was that the same issue? Sorry, Mark, you're still on mute there.
You hear me okay now, yeah?
Yeah, that's you now. Apologies, Mark. Go on ahead.
I'm still learning this process, but... through the chair, can I make an amendment then? Can I make a plea for an amendment?
You can, and then
to Pete's proposal.
Yep, you can request an amendment, then we can see if Pete wants to accept it, and then we can move on that. And that's so. Go on ahead. Do you want to request your amendment?
Yes, if you could, Pete, along with your amendment, along with your proposal, could this council send out a clear message to DFA regarding our recommendations tonight? Could we have a recorded vote regarding the planning application or the suggestions from planning and from Mr. McKay that we refuse this application? Could we vote tonight to see that we could send out a clear message to DFA, just for transparency, and that we will have a clear message.
Councillor Byrne, would you be willing to accept that amendment?
No, Chair, I can't, and I'll tell you why I can't. And all the comments that I made right through this meeting, Councillor Gibbons had talked about sending a message of confidence, with confidence. I really can't do that. I mean, the report that's in front of us, I sat on the panel in 2017 when we had an extensive report for planning. I am not happy with the report that's in front of us. I'm not happy with us as a council declaring a climate emergency and then not having an extensive discussion, and site visits on this application. So I can't say with confidence, and I'm a person that goes over detail. I am not saying one way or the other where I am on the application, because I was in a certain position in 2017. I've extensively went out and spoke to people in both sides of the argument. As I said, I went to Tyrone to speak to probably the biggest opponents of wind farms and got a lot of information. And I want to have the information in front of me that I can send a confident steer to the department. And I am holding my hands up and saying right now, I can't send a confident steer to the department. So I think it's right and proper, like the Doraville application, that the PAC sits and robustly interrogates all the information on both sides and comes to some sort of steer that the Minister for the Department of Infrastructure can then make a decision. We've seen what happened with the Doraville decision this morning when that has happened, and I think it is the right and proper way to go on this. So I for that reason, I can't accept the amendment from Council.
Sorry, Chair. Chair, could I come in just for one more point? Chair.
Yes, Mark.
just regarding, I can understand what you're saying, Pete, but just, if this was voted on before in 2017, it went 15 all, and then the chair swung the vote but regarding the decision. It's been voted on before with a recorded vote. This would send out the general consensus to DFA. At least they would know what our opinion would be within the council. We are going to send out a mixed message to DFA, and then they can. We're kicking the can down the road here. And there's going to be a decision made regarding a public inquiry, and then we can say as a chamber, we sent a complete mixed message. We didn't even send a message to DFA.
I'll reply to that comment, Chair, very, very briefly. We can't send a stronger message than calling for a public inquiry. That is the strongest message that we can send right now, that we need to go through and interrogate the information that's in front of us. I will say this very, very briefly. When we made the decision in 2017, we had extensive site visits. We had the report in front of us and the slides were extensive. We have sat through this meeting where councillors have come in and asked where the wind farms are and where are these photos. Some people said top of the morns. Some people said these are 25 photos. We haven't seen them. Can we seriously take that from tonight and send a comprehensive direction to DFI? I think it's right that a public inquiry is called for, and that the information can be interrogated so that the Minister can make a decision similar that she made, you know, from the Dorville application following the PSC's interrogation of it. So I think it is the strongest message that we can send here.
Okay, thank you, Pete. And Mark, so obviously your request for an amendment there as follows is back to the substantive motion. Councillor Clark, you wanted to come in there at that stage?
Yeah, Chair. 1 minute.
Yep,
I sort of want to go back to this. The start, Pete, if we could tighten your proposal up and that, you know, we write, this council writes to DFA Minister Nicola Mallon and asks her to hold an independent public inquiry. I still think that's as tight as we can get and as robust a message coming back from this council. So if you're happy to tighten that up, Pete, I would support the motion.
Yeah, Chair, happy to come back in.
Yeah. Yep, go on ahead, Pete.
Yeah, listen, we're on the same page here, and I suppose if we're sending a direction to ask to hold a public inquiry, and it's the opinion of the Minister that it doesn't warrant a public inquiry, whether it's the size of the applications or whatever, but I think with the division and the information out there and the division in the community that it does, and the fact that it's an AONB, I looked through the criteria of the Dorville application, I think it's quite similar. So yeah, I have absolutely no problem just saying that we write and ask. No problem whatsoever.
Fair enough, thanks for that, Pete. Now, we're Sinn Féin, we're happy to support them, obviously, the proposal. I suppose, talking to the motion then, Chair, it was touched on there by Dawson Selfox in regards to the natural environment and a reconnection with the great outdoors. And we've all witnessed that right across all of our areas of outstanding natural beauty, which we've three. Just looking at the mountain range of the Mourns, I would have walked a lot in it this past number of months. And indeed years, I spent most of my adult working life in the Mourne Mountains, working with the Mourne Heritage Trust, but also with the National Trust as well, doing footpath repair and building stone walls. So I have a great affinity with the Mourne Mountains and how valuable an asset they are. And as I say, they evaded people's mental well-being, but also their physical well-being in regards to the COVID-19 and pandemic. It's also a great tourism asset that will obviously help us in regards to our recovery from COVID-19. And I suppose what a public inquiry does, it gives us, you know, it gives everybody a great opportunity, you know, for greater transparency, you know, to scrutinise the application in detail. As Pete said, there's different issues of it, and some of our councillors talked about different critical views and not being able to see them, critical views, or even have information in regards to it. There's a vast amount of information to take in regards to this, and I think it's only fair, such an important planning application for our district. You have to weigh up the economic and the mitigation of climate change with protecting our landscapes, our valuable landscapes. And they have an area outstanding natural beauty protection because they are unique. And that's why they have the protection, and that's why they have to be protected. I'd say it's split the community. It's right across the board. You know, it's in different organisations at different communities throughout the area. Political parties have different views in regards to it. Political parties' memberships have different views in regards to it. No different from the community. But I think it's important that we get it right, and we protect our community, and we have the greatest scrutiny possible. We believe before any decision can be taken by Minister Mullen, she needs to have, you know, that full information. And I think in her press statement today, she actually alluded to the fact that the public inquiry information give her a better informed decision, as well as her planning officers as well. So it actually helped her in her process. So I think it's important that we do it in this application as well. The application itself is, you know, it has a number of concerning issues for the local community. And, you know, at the end of the day, what we want to do is ensure that that this proposal is dealt with. It was here before. It annoyed the community previously, and there was a lot of bitterness in the last application. So a planning, if we go for the public independent public inquiry, that will bring an end to the situation, and that the people would not have to continually go over this. And I agree, time is the essence as well, Chair. They do have to get a decision as quickly as possible moving forward. So, as I said, I'm finishing up, Chair. The biggest level of protection we can offer is the area of Stand Matcha Beauty, and we have to bear that in mind. The public will welcome a full public scrutiny of this application. As I said, there's the visual aspects, but there's the habitats aspect. There's the issue in regards to connections to the grid and other issues that was raised previously. And as I said, the community don't want this proposal hanging over them any longer. We do want to get this dealt with and the best decision taken for the local community. And so in regards to that, I'm happy to support the proposal, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Clark. So moving on down the instant message there, Councillor Riley, your request for a recorded vote has been noted. There's still people seeking clarity, so we'll come back to that. Councillor Casey, you're in next, sir, for clarification.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I just need to know what I'm voting on here. I don't think Pete was taking on board the point that Willie Clark was making there about the independent public inquiry aspect of it. Pete kept mentioning the public inquiry, but it needs to be, you know, all-encompassing independent public inquiry. And I think Willie should, you know, push that point across.
And before we get down to put that to a vote, Charlie, we'll get read out again in terms of what actually the proposal is. Councillor Riley, you're in next there.
Yeah, thanks very much, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I'm very concerned that the Council will give out a very weak message in this. It does look as if councillors who may actually want this project want to hide behind a public inquiry. It's an awful way to do politics, shocking way to do politics, that we can't come out. Haven't heard the all the comment and discussion. How anybody could support this is beyond me. And what happens if Nicola Mallon writes back and says, look, I didn't ask you for a comment on a public inquiry. I asked you to make a decision as a statutory consultee. We can't be this weak. Either if you support it, come out and support it, and if you don't, don't support it. But we can't dismiss our statutory function. We just can't do that, Chairman. So I think we should go with Gibbons' proposal, and it's either for or against, and we live with that. But this is pathetic, Chairman.
Thank you, Henry. We've got one proposal on the floor at this moment in time. If we move on then, Councillor Larkin, I don't think your instant message is working, but your hand was up there apparently. Go on ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Chair, I was just going to raise the same issue that Charlie did there, Pete's proposal there, and Willie coming in relation to an independent public inquiry. I just want confirmation of what it is that the proposal that Pete's making now is. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Mick. You never picked someone up at the end. We can address those points. Councillor McMurray, you're in next, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, just want to go back again for slight clarification, just to point Miss
I'm very conscious of the fact that the wee clock there says 2 hours and 30 minutes here, but if we don't give a response to this as it is, then that Miss Largy was advising that was then essentially no objection. And I'm just wondering how that then ties in with the whatever, you know, independent public inquiry or public inquiry. But say, if we just go for an inquiry, does that elicit no response? And if that's elicit no response, does that mean there's no objection? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Andy, for that. Councillor Tinley, you're in next, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Sure, I'd be concurring with Councillor Reilly's view on this. I'm disappointed to hear about this red herring of public inquiries, because that's all it is, Chair, it's a cop-out where councillors don't want to take a difficult decision here and actually pass the decision on to somebody else. And bear in mind, we're not the decision makers. We've been asked for a corporate view on this, because an inquiry, public or otherwise, unless it's going to make these things invisible, I'm not sure what it is that Councillor Bourne and Councillor Clark would be seeking out of a public inquiry. So I'd be happy enough to go with Councillor Gibbons as well.
Thank you, Charlotte. I think, Nora, you wanted to come in there?
Yes, Chair, thank you. It was just on the point that was raised by Councillor McMurray in relation to a potential response going to the department, not indicating a position one way or the other. Certainly, if members go with this proposal today, officers will be able to record the discussion that has taken place and the issues that have arisen, and that these are the reasons why the council took a view that a more detailed public examination or public inquiry was required. So we can certainly put the issues that members have raised, you know, in favour or against the proposal, so that those concerns are registered with the department in terms of the request for public inquiry. So we would essentially use what you've said as a council tonight to frame our response to DFI by highlighting the issues that have arisen and why members feel that that needs to be addressed by a public inquiry. So your concerns either way would be on record in relation to the issues.
That's very useful, Nora. Thank you for that. We have two more speakers at this stage. Councillor Hannah.
Just, Chair, a wee bit of clarity on this. If we decide to go down this road of a public consultation or whatever you want to inquire or whatever you want to call it, are we kicking this just down the road for another 2 years? And who, to be quite honest with you, is it the ratepayers and the taxpayers is going to bear the cost of this? It's going to be a substantial inquiry if it's going to drag on like that. So, quite honestly, I'm sure nobody can answer me how long it's going to be. You're probably talking about another 2 years, so you are here, and there's a substantial cost in this. I actually think some sort of a decision needs to be made in this, and that would be my thoughts on it.
Thank you, Glenn. I'm wondering, maybe Nora, would you be happy to come back in there on that in terms of cost? I presume if we're responding as a consultee to DFI, and then it's DFI's decision whether they have an inquiry, then at that point, then that'd be paid for. It certainly wouldn't be out of our council budget. Would that be correct?
That's correct. The only cost to the council would be the cost of any officer time in terms of preparing or representing the council at that public inquiry.
Thank you for that, Nora. Councillor Savage.
Yes, Chair. It's just really on the line that Henry had said there, that this was people who were for this hiding behind a public inquiry. That's not the case. It's obvious from discussions that groupings right across this council have had and the debate that's been there tonight that there are concerns of both sides. There's a need for information. There's a need for this to be interrogated. And I think regardless on which side anybody is on this argument, we need to get the whole thing interrogated properly, get the right information, dissect misinformation for what it is, and make sure that a decision is made based on balanced information, a balanced outlook that takes on all the factors that have been highlighted tonight. And as Nora has said, I think there's been a very strong debate with all the arguments made and all the concerns raised across all the councillors and all the council groupings, and I believe that needs to be fed in to reflect the views, the very mixed views that there are across this chamber, and ensure that when that public inquiry is the right vehicle to take this process forward. And I would agree and I would counter Councillor Reddy's argument that it's not a case of people heading in any shape or form. This is about getting the right result. This is a very important decision, and we need to make sure that it's handled properly and the information is interrogated properly. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Michael, I know Councillor Gibbons, you've been in a few times. I'll let you in one more time. Oh, are you on mute still? Councillor Gibbons?
Sorry.
Yep. Just to say towards the end,
Chair, thank you for letting me in. I know I've spoke a lot about it, but I'm bitterly disappointed in what we're doing here. I think it's a two fingers up. It's, as somebody who's just come into this process and you have this high respect for our different departments and our planning department, I think that's it's a two fingers straight up to the planning department. And to go for a public inquiry, I think it's kicking the can down the road. We are sending a complete mixed message to DFA. It's offloaded the responsibility. It's offloaded the hard questions that needed to be asked, the hard decisions that need to be made tonight. And I just hope this doesn't come back to haunt us further on down the line. I feel it could be a green light for this application through the back door.
Thank you. Mark, I'll maybe pass back now to Councillor Byrne to sum up before we go for a vote.
Yeah, I'll be very brief, a minute or so. There's just maybe a few comments there that they're confusing in what they're saying, because that's not what I'm proposing. We're not hiding behind anything. I think I've been very, very clear since I came on to council that I stand by every decision that we make. And in 2017, my decision's out there for the public. Where I have voted for this application. I have since, from 2017, and I've stated that I've engaged with people who are opposed to wind farms, and I am probably very few councillors in this meeting tonight have sat with the Brockdale Community Association, the residents, who had an application for 33 turbines up in the Sperrins. And I listened to them, and I went back over the last couple of months, and they've been on the phone to me about different things in my role as climate change spokesperson. And I listened to the Mourn Against the Wind Farms as well. And it is not about hiding behind the decision. It is about giving it a message to DFI as a key consultee. And people are saying that it's kicking the can down the road. The minister will put a lot of weight on the decision from this council. So what we're saying is, stop going around in circles. 2015, this was taken. 2017, this was taken. 2020, this is taken. Does this community have to go through this in 2022, 2023? If we go to a public inquiry and get all the information out there, then the information can be divulged back to the Minister for Infrastructure, as was done with Doraville today, and the Minister will make a decision. The PAC had sat last September in 2019 on Doraville on that large application of 33 turbines, and the Minister refused it today in an AONB. I'm sure Councillor Gibbons, when he's making his comments, agrees with the Minister's decision today. But we cannot keep putting this community around in circles, you know, with the information coming from both sides. So this is not about offloading responsibility. This is coming to a conclusion that is proper in this process, and instead of putting this council around it every single 3 years, I don't think it's fair and I don't think it's right. And I will stand back up to the vote that I made in 2017, and I will stand behind this decision. And I think, you know, listening to the residents of Brockdale today, I think it's the right decision. The issue that was raised, I don't know if Councillor Clark, is he still on the call? The issue that was raised, there's no ambiguity in what I'm stating here. You know, the independent inquiry is independent. I have absolutely no issue with those wardens, Councillor Casey and Councillor Larkin had said. We've seen the independence of the inquiry, given the advice to Nicola Mallon today, and then she makes the decision on the back of that, which she reached the statement this morning. So, listen, there's no trickery going on here. It is simply an independent inquiry, and to get to the bottom of this issue and to stop going around in circles and make a decision on this once and for all. It's certainly not passing the buck or hiding behind. It's not something that I do in local government. It's not something I'm going to start doing today.
Okay. Councillor Byrne, thank you very much for that. Councillor Riley called for a recorded vote. Can I maybe hand over to Democratic Services for that?
Chair, sorry if I've been awkward, Billy Clark here. Just in regards to the motion, so the motion that's before us, that Pete's put forward, this council writes to the Minister, Nicola Mallon, DFI, calling for a public inquiry, independent public inquiry into this application. Is that correct?
Yes, Chair. I was happy to take that change in warden. It's effectively the same message, and just for, you know, to make sure that there's no trickery in wards here, we're in the same thing. Absolutely, yeah. That's what we're voting.
Sure. Thanks, Pete.
Okay. Thank you, Pete. Thank you. Willie, can I pass over to Sarah from Democratic Services potentially for the recorded vote?
Yep. Okay. Councillor Andrews.
I don't. My laptop has died, so there's no picture, but there's sound. I'm for the motion.
Okay. Councillor Brown.
Four.
Can I ask that everybody keeps the microphone off until
is that your microphone is muted?
Everybody needs to keep it off until I call their name.
Yeah.
Sorry, that Councillor Brown. I didn't hear Councillor Brown, so you can go again.
Sorry, I'm four.
Okay. Councillor Bridges?
Four.
Councillor Burns?
Four.
Councillor Casey?
Four.
Four.
Your turn.
Sorry, folks, whose microphone is that? People need to mute their microphones.
Councillor Kern? Sorry, Councillor Kern?
Sir, is that Councillor Kern you're asking for?
It is, yeah. Sorry, yeah.
I'm sorry, for the motion. Okay.
Councillor Devlin?
Four.
Councillor Dorn?
Four.
Councillor Enright?
Abstain.
Councillor Finnegan?
Four.
Councillor Gallagher? Councillor Gibbons?
Against.
Councillor Hanlon?
Four.
Councillor Hannah?
Four.
Councillor Hart?
Four.
Councillor Howell?
Four.
Councillor Larkin?
Four.
Councillor Lewis?
Four.
Councillor McGuinness?
Four.
Councillor Malone has left. Councillor Mason?
Four.
Councillor McAteer?
Four.
Councillor McAvoy?
Four.
Councillor McKee?
Four.
Councillor McKevitt? Sorry, Councillor McKevitt. You're just on mute there.
Four.
Councillor McMurray?
Four.
Councillor Mulgrew?
Four.
Councillor Murphy?
Four.
Councillor O'Hare?
Four.
Councillor O'Murray? Isn't on the call. Councillor Owen?
Four.
Councillor Riley?
Against.
Councillor Wan?
Four.
Councillor Savage?
Four.
Councillor Sharvin?
Four.
Councillor Stokes?
Four.
Councillor Taylor?
Four.
Councillor Tinley?
Against.
Councillor Traynor?
Four.
Councillor Walker?
Four.
Okay, so I have 35 for, 3 against, and 1 abstention.
Sarah, thank you so much for going through all that. Thank you so much for going through all that. So that motion is declared carried. So that response will go back to DFI based on that. Listen, thank you to everybody for attending this evening. I know it was a difficult enough meeting for some people, so I appreciate all your cooperation. Thank you very much, and good night, everybody.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chair.